The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the lane, snow's glistening. A beautiful sight, oh, we're happy tonight. Walking in a winter wonderland. Gone away is a bluebird, here to stay is a new bird. He's singing a song as we go along, walking in a winter wonderland. Well, in the meadow we can build a snowman and pretend that he is Parson Brown. He'll say, are you married? We'll say, no, man. But you can do the job when you're in town. Later on, we'll conspire as we dream by the fire to face unafraid all the plans that we've made, walking in the winter wonderland.
Snowman, and
pretend that
he's a circus clown. We'll have lots of fun with Mr. Snowman
until the other kiddies knock him down. Oh, when it snows, ain't it thrilling? Though your nose gets chilling, we'll frolic and play the Eskimo way, walking in winter wonderland.
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length, where we discuss all things E-Mini, along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Wednesday, 30th day of November, 2011. Let's have a quick look at the numbers. The Dow is up 410 points. S&P is up 40. The comp is up 86. Gold up $29. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Dwayne.
How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How about yourself?
Peachy keen. This is a parabolic move, guys. Look at this thing. This is an hourly chart in front of you. And this is the market run amok on a good day. That's the stuff Santa Claus rallies are made of. This one just may be a little too steep to sustain. I would, prefer to see a gradual move higher. But you know what? Let's kickstart the thing, and we'll get some two-sided action. And this is all based upon the central banks pulling their head out of their offices and saying, "Okay." I dropped a letter there. There's suddenly the collective consciousness just amazes me. It's like we wake up one day and the sky is falling, and then all of a sudden the Dow's up 406 points. I mean, actually, this has been cooking since Sunday night, as you recall.
Yes.
Back here. And we go back to Friday. Okay, Friday the markets tried to rally, but then Fitch stepped in and whacked some country. Portugal, is that it?
It might be Portugal.
Not to in any way diminish anyone who might be in our listening audience from Portugal. We love the Portuguese. Fitch has a lot of power. Maybe not as much power as Standard & Poor's, but apparently it's pretty severe. Because we got this, but then we bounced off the bottom. And then we had an 18-point gap when Globex opened Sunday night. And that was without any real news or solution or anything. It was just, I don't know, the market was tired of going down. It wanted to do something different for a change. I mean, it had been falling. How long were we in that short swing trade, Mike? How long was that?
Over a week.
Over a week.
It was from the 16th till Friday.
Okay, from the 16th until we got jumped
25th,
into the trade on Friday. Yeah. Okay, and so, here's Monday. That's just kind of a normal up day. That's good. Then yesterday, now this is a Globex chart, so you're seeing this here. Okay. But suddenly, midnight, Europe opens, and that's what really happened. From the low last night at 84, we're now up at 1240. Oh, let me do the math. 1240.
84 to 1240?
Minus.
That's 56.
It is.
Okay.
56 points. The S&P. Not the Dow. The S&P. So, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So some smart guy that an apple fell on his head one day, I think, said. Or maybe it was a different smart guy. But it was said. And so, this is good. Enjoy it. I hope you are long all the way up. I hope you made a ton of money off of it. If you do have profits, protect them. However it is you do that. Whether you move your stop or, peel some off, take some off the table, sell a little. I don't know. That's, you got yourself into this, good for you. You can certainly figure out how to get yourself out of it and or protect yourself against the decline that ultimately will come. The coming today, is that the top? I don't know. I can't predict the future. It looks a little overdone, don't you think? I mean, we could retrace. We don't draw fibs a lot here, but just for argument's sake, we could. Right now, 12.12 would be a 50% retracement. So from 12.40, we could plummet, as they would call it later on CNBC. They would say, oh, the market plummeted into the close. No, it did a normal 50% retracement. Or even a 38. I mean, a 38% retracement would bring it back to out about 12.18. Somewhere in there, yeah. So, you know, but I wouldn't try to get too cute up here trying to figure out if this is the top and, you know, I'm not saying you can't short it. I'm just saying be careful. A lot of garbles? Well, I don't know what to say, Greg. I apologize. Is it garble to you, Michael?
It was garble.
Wow.
It was a little bit of garble. Well, it was garble in one stretch right there.
Never really.
It was. You
know, right.
If English is your primary language, right, then you could probably figure out what you were saying.
All right. All right, then, I'll tell you what. Later in the show, if the garble goes away, we'll talk about the secret Fed loans that were given to banks. $13 billion that Congress never knew about. Only the Fed and the banks. Banks who were sending out letters to their shareholders telling them how strong they were, how awesome they were. This news is just Bloomberg sued the Fed, and the Fed fought it all the way to the Supreme Court to keep this a secret. But now it's no longer a secret, and it's not a conspiracy theory cooked up on a train to Jekyll Island. This is fact. And we'll talk about it a little later in the program. And then tonight I will publish a link to the article. So, with that, Michael,
all right,
take the camera, take the mic,
all right,
and
let me grab everything.
Shoot the video. This video won't take long, guys, because you got plenty of time. Take all the time you want.
Yes, plenty of time. Plenty of time. David may be able to get in here early today, assuming I don't have any issues. All right, now I'm about to start the recording. 3, 2, 1. All right, good afternoon, everyone. Today is Wednesday, November 30th, 2011. I just want to do a quick recap of all the trades that we took or didn't take or set up this morning in the live trading room. Let's start off with the results. 24 ticks, we got that right away. I'll show you that trade. That was our first trade. We got what we were looking for, and then we switched gears into training mode. All right. Let me just go there right now. You see, I've already brought this chart back to the open. We didn't have any opportunities right in here because the bubble was not present. We needed a bubble to be present. All right. Once it opened up, I think we had a trade possibility right here, but I missed it. But I didn't mark it. But anyway, this was our first opportunity right here. All right. We had a higher swing pivot. We had a fresh bubble down here on the chop bands. Price pulled down to the BBC. We got in with an MIT order, and we took 2 points. I don't think price ever went against us in this trade. I think it just came down, filled us with our MIT order, and went right to our target. After that, we had another opportunity right in here. You see we had a fresh bubble right here. Higher swing came down, filled us here. Price started moving up. Now, this was right on a news event. I think it was existing home sales or something like that, pending home sales, I think. Which, by the way, was multiples of what they were anticipating. So we were in the trade and we were profitable in the trade. It had moved 5 or 6 ticks in my favor, and I moved my stop up to break even, and I moved my target way out. Unfortunately, it came and got me a break even, and got me out of break even on that trade. It did actually go to the profit target, but it got me out of break even first. Then we had a bunch of chop in here. For quite some time we had chop in there. All right, and then we started to move up. Now, where the market is right now, the big jump that we had in the Globex and the pre-market, we are above our normal weekly zones, so we reverted back to last week's zones, and that's what you see right here. All right, I was looking for a pullback here, a possible entry position, but we didn't have a fresh bubble for that. Once we got the bubble, we were too close to the bands to take the trade. So price moved off of that, and now you can see we are in our break period right here. So we did not take any more trades here from the 4-tick range. There is one that's starting to set up right here. Right now, you see we have a fresh bubble right here. We need the BBC to get down below the elbow extension right here, below the box, and then we could short off the BBC. Now, let's move over here, because I want to point a couple things out over here on the 2100 tick. We'll start there. Okay. On the 2100 tick, once it loads for us, I will show you. All right. One of our partners asked how to trade off the this weekly trading zone. This was last week's weekly trading zone, actually. And we do have, you know, different partners have different ways of handling this. I said in the live trading room this morning, one way to do it, there's one partner that he likes to puts an order on here, and then he puts another one on here. And he puts 3 points risk on this one, 2 points risk on this one. That would put his stop up at 1241. And he looks to get a couple of points out of each one. In this case here, he would have gotten a couple of points out of both of them. What I had said is, I repeated that, and another thing that I had said was, when price was right here, I had said, okay, now right here, it looks like if the level is gonna hold, what you could do is short right here at this, with a point risk. I mean, as small as a point risk, and look for the thing to really have a decent move down. If you're wrong, you only risk a point. If you're right, now you can make quite a few points on it. It turned out to be a good move. If you shorted there at 1239, you know, it dropped all the way down here to 30, just about to 34, for just about a 5-point move, risking only 1 point. All right. Now, in addition to that, that was how to trade off the zone. But in addition to that, let me scroll back here and I'll go over some of the other trades that set up during the morning session on this 2100 tick time frame. All right. There were a few. Now, this is Mike R., one of the partners' trade setups that he does. He had brought it to the room, to the partners, and suggested that we do it. And it works well. In here, he's looking for the cycle to be down below 50. You have a bearish cross, you have a pullback up to the BBC, you short the BBC. So there was one. Now, flip it around. Here was one on the long side. Flip it around again. Here was one on the short side, right there. Flip it around again, and we're looking over here now, right in here, but we wouldn't have done this going into the zone. Flip it around again, and here's another one on the short side. Nothing in here going into the zone, and here we are right now. So there's a possibility right here. All right. That was the 2100 tick. All right. Now, if we jump over here to the 10K, there was a trade that I took on the 10K this morning. I'll show it to you once it loads. I ended up taking plus one tick on it, I think. But there it is right there. Now, with the 10K, it's similar to the 2100 tick, except I don't like to trade into support and resistance or weekly trading zones. But you had your bearish cross here with your pullback up here. You had a bullish cross here with a pullback. The pullback was actually way over here. The cycle was out of favor of that. You had your bearish cross here with your pullback right here. This is the trade that I took. It went about a point in my favor a couple of times, and it was having trouble closing down below the MA1 right here. It ticked off the MA1 quite a few times. It started to have trouble closing below it. So I got out of that trade with one tick profit. Okay, and I'm glad I did, because it soon turned around. We had a bullish cross, attempted pullback right here, but it didn't pull all the way back. By the time it pulled back, it was going right into the zone, so there was no trade there. Rolled over, bearish cross, pulled back to the BBC. You had a bullish cross right here, again going into the zone, so there's nothing there. Bearish cross with a pullback to the BBC right here. right? So you see the markets were all doing pretty much the same thing on different time frames. Or the ES was doing pretty much the same thing on the different time frames, at least these two that I showed you. Over here on the four tick range chart, we need the BBC to get down below right here right now, and we're going to need a fresh bubble on that because this would have triggered in, so that would have been the first pullback to the BBC with this bubble. So we're going to need a fresh bubble on that. That's for all the partners. On the YM, we didn't take any trades on the YM this morning. The YM was pretty crunched up most of the morning because of the market movement. You know, we were looking for bearish cross. We never got a pull away from the BBC. We had a bullish cross. Here was the pullback to the BBC right here. You could have gone long right there on that pullback to the BBC. Had you gone long, this pullback right here, had you gone long from 9:30 to 9, it went all the way up to 9.88. Just call it 9.89. 60 ticks or 60 points. That's $300 equivalent per contract. We had a bearish cross with a pullback right here. Bullish cross with a pullback right here. Now, this was a high momentum bar, so we wouldn't have taken that, but we have a bearish cross right here with a pullback to the BBC again. This right here would be an opportunity, or it was an opportunity. Now that opportunity has run its course. All right. I want to just jump over here and point one thing out to you guys. This huge gap. Hang on. Once it loads, you'll see it. And then there's one other thing that I want to show. just so everyone can appreciate it. Here was the huge gap right here. All right. From yesterday to this morning, it was about a 32-point gap up. And price moved up. It continued with the momentum on the way up. But you see up here, we have these huge wicks and dojis right up here. So it would not surprise me to see this thing drop all the way back down here to 1218. Okay, that would not shock me at all. One other thing worth noting. Our last swing trade trigger was to be long above 1172. 1172, that was Friday afternoon, but it would have filled Sunday night. All right, so now it's Wednesday, 1172 up to 1239. Let's see, that's 18 plus 39. That would be 57 points. All right, the trade before that, before we put the beta trade out, went for 91 points. We were looking for an average of 34 points, and we nailed the 34-point average yesterday, I believe. And now we're above that average. We're bringing that average up a little bit on this trade right now. All right. I wanted to point that out. And one other thing that Dwayne and I were, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning while all of you were sound asleep, Dwayne and I were toiling over the possibility of a short trade, possible short swing trade. And I just want to show you how close it came. We were very close right here. We were within a couple of ticks of probably maybe within a point of triggering a short trade, but it was accurate enough that it did not trigger us into the short, and the close of that bar and the next bar suggested that we were going to move up. Just wanted you all to appreciate that, because last night when Dwayne and I were going back and forth at 3 o'clock in the morning, we were almost sad that nobody could appreciate it with us. All right, that's it. I'm going to wrap up the recording right here. Open you up for any questions. All right, the recording is done.
Okay.
So, does anyone have any questions about any of this stuff?
That would be a resounding no. I think.
All right. Thank you, Femi.
a lively bunch today.
Yeah, I know. All right. I guess the important thing out of all this is that we hit our daily goal. We hit it within the first 15 minutes. After that, it was just training in the morning. We did have opportunity this morning, even with the market being the way that it was. We had some opportunity. I don't think. Knocking on wood. I don't think I don't think we had any losing trades, did we? If you did what I did, you didn't have any losing trades. And it was, it was a good day. I'm happy to see that that last swing trade that we had alerted everyone to is doing as well as it is. And I just wish the darn thing would have ended and we would have dropped 50 points. We can be done with the beta, but, but we have to go through these steps, these growing pains. So if you're all good with that, then we could even go out to David early today. How about that? Do we need to text him and let him know that we're ready?
Nah, I think he's hanging out. Let me check in the green room, see if he's there. Yeah, I was thinking Mike Reed might pop in today, because it's such a big day in the market. The Dow's up 417, the S&P is up 40. FYI, guys, the sky is still falling. Okay, so carry an umbrella.
Yeah, don't.
It's an up day. Enjoy it. I don't want to rain anybody's, you know, parade. But nothing's changed. Like I said, earlier in the week, they'll get some creative guys to move some decimal points. You know, cook some books, put on some fresh goggles, you know. Here, look through this lens. Oh yeah, maybe that's not so bad. Okay, but eventually, the chickens come home to roost, you have to pay the band. You know, you've heard all this stuff before. Can you put it off and put it off and put it off? I don't know. Tell you what, I will put a link tonight in the show notes on the blog post to this Bloomberg article, but it's pretty. Are you sticking around, Michael? Or are you taking off? What are you doing?
I'm gonna be here for a little bit longer, but my wife has a medical procedure. She's gotta go today and Friday, and I think there's another one next week too. So I'm gonna have to take off after that. But I'm gonna be here for a little bit.
All right. Well, reason I asked, I'm just gonna go ahead and put this up on the screen. Were you planning to do any trading?
No, I'm done. I'm done. We've hit the goal for the day. I'm going to stop right now.
Okay, guys. Now, this is no midnight train to Jekyll Island, okay? Because some people go, well, you know, blah, blah. This is Bloomberg, okay? Love him or not. And secret Fed loans gave banks $13 billion undisclosed to Congress. Okay? This may or may not mean anything to you, but it should. It should speak volumes. Now, this is not some conspiracy theory. Okay? This isn't a bunch of guys in tinfoil hats saying that this was done. This is Bloomberg. You might have heard of them. And they had to go all the way to the Supreme Court, you might have heard of them, to get this information. Federal Reserve and the big banks fought off for more than 2 years to keep details of the largest bailout in U.S. history a secret. Now the rest of the world can see what it was missing. The Fed didn't tell anyone which banks were in trouble so deep that they required a combined $1.2 trillion on December the 5th, 2008, their single neediest day. Bankers didn't mention that they took tens of billions of dollars in emergency loans at the same time they were assuring investors their firms were healthy. And no one calculated until now that banks reaped an estimated $13 billion of income by taking advantage of the Fed's below-market rates. Now, it would take a long time to read you all 29,000 pages of the documents that were obtained under the Freedom of Information Act. I'll leave that up to you. While Fed officials say that almost all of the loans were repaid, and there have been no losses, details suggest taxpayers paid a price beyond dollars as the secret funding helped preserve a broken status quo and enable the biggest banks to grow even bigger. When you see the dollars the banks got, it's hard to make the case that they were successful institutions. Now, the size of the bailout came to light after Bloomberg, aforementioned, decided to investigate this thing. They won a court case against the Fed and a group of the biggest U.S. banks who actually have an LLC, really? Called Clearinghouse Association, to force lending details into the open. The Fed, headed by Bernanke, argued that revealing borrower details would create a stigma. Investors and counterparties would shun firms that use the central bank as lender of last resort, and that needy institutions would be reluctant to borrow in the next crisis. Clearinghouse Association fought Bloomberg's lawsuit all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, which declined to hear the bank's appeal in March 2011. $7.77 trillion. No one in this audience can even, myself included, comprehend how much money that really is. But it's the amount of money the central bank parceled out. It surprised even Gary Stern, president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis, who says he wasn't aware of the magnitude. Now, this thing dwarfed the Treasury Department's better known $700 billion TARP program. That was like a magician's distraction. Let's distract them with the TARP thing over here. They can all go on talk radio and go rah, rah, rah about all of that while we're really shoveling the big money out the back door. TARP at least had some strings attached. This money was just handed out. Bank of America CEO Kenneth Lewis, on November 26, 2008, he wrote a letter to his shareholders that he headed one of the strongest and most stable major banks in the world. He didn't say that his Charlotte, North Carolina-based firm owed the central bank $86 billion that day. Jamie Dimon, J.P. Morgan, told shareholders that he used the TARP at the request of the Fed to help motivate others to use the system. What he didn't say is that the New York-based bank's total TAF borrowings were almost twice its cash holdings, or that its peak borrowing of $48 billion on February 26 of 2009 came more than a year after the program's creation. It goes on, it goes on, it goes on. Now, I'm not going to read the whole thing because it would take too long, but I really encourage you to click the link tonight. I'll even put it here in the chat room. Read this. Congress didn't know about this money. Citigroup, Wells Fargo, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley accounted for 63% of the average daily debt. Morgan Stanley, they're... See if I see where they're... Yeah. See, right here. Lawmakers knew none of this. Congress, they didn't know. They didn't vote on this. They didn't approve it. They don't have to because the Fed has that autonomy. They had no clue that just one bank, New York-based Morgan Stanley, took $107 billion in Fed loans in September 2008. Get this. Enough to pay off one-tenth of the country's delinquent mortgages. The firm's peak borrowing occurred the same day Congress rejected the proposed TARP bill, triggering the biggest point drop ever in the Dow. The bill, by the way, later passed, and Morgan Stanley got $10 billion of TARP funds. Though Paulson said only healthy institutions were eligible. Guys, if you can't see the moral hazard here, you gotta wake up. Because it's getting bigger. The Fed and its secret financing. Huh. At the expense of you, the American people. And Wells Fargo's hands were not clean. Okay?
and I'm sure David will defend them when he comes on, because they didn't get involved in the housing thing, but, you know, they're a big bank, and so you got to read this. And again, this is not some conspiracy theory cooked up on a train to Jekyll Island. This is a case that just went to the Supreme Court. We're going to pause now for a station identification, and we're going to go to that jewel in the desert, our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, at PageTrader.com.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310. And we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Michael, if you're still with us.
Good morning, David. I'm here for a few more minutes.
Well, good. Well, I'll tell you, a lot has happened in the last day, hasn't it?
Yes, yes, quite a bit.
Well, has it really? I mean, yeah, I know the market's much higher. But that's what we were talking about earlier, is has anything changed other than the markets are higher?
Yeah, right. We'll find out. Now, the markets are higher because the markets have responded well to the idea that a rescue is taking place here. For banks, I'm not sure I'm very clear on what is being rescued, but put that aside. I don't even mean that to be funny, you know, but it is.
It's like it's like telling a drowning man, hey, hang tight, we're working on this idea called a life preserver, and we hope to have it to you in the very near future. So keep paddling.
We're testing it out on some other people that are, it's a simulated drowning over here. And just as soon as some of those tests have completed, we'll apply for a patent and we'll get the thing moved through. And either way, the markets responded very powerfully to that bit of news. I happen to know for a fact that this is one of those situations in trading where not to be negative, but there's quite a few people who were on the wrong side of the market coming into this morning, maybe woke up with the market dramatically against them, maybe or maybe not using a stop. And this is why we have these discussions on the radio so much, and I'm not going to hammer it right now, but this type of volatility will expose whatever Achilles heels you have in your trading. Everyone has them, so there's nothing wrong with saying I have an issue that I'm working with, whether it's a stop loss or a profit taking or an entry issue. But when the volatility gets really big, the size of the market, the volatility itself tends to expose whatever Achilles heel you have and really make that Achilles heel an expensive proposition for you. So there's a lot of learning that you can do in this type of market. If you've been around for a while, you can use your own setups and own, you know, moves that move against you or whatever triggers that happen to cause you grief to help improve your game. So I do happen to know also of some traders that did very well with this on the overnight, and these are news-based traders that were able to put together, and they were there when this occurred and decided to be in and did very well on the upside. And I hope for them that they continue to do so as the market puts in this top. We had talked about yesterday, Duane, about today, November 30th, being the next important top. There was higher. We expected higher prices, as I mentioned on the program yesterday. This is a very powerful advance. There's a number of things we could say about this, one of which is that this move up certainly further confirms the monthly bottom. It would take quite a bit of movement on the downside, substantial, to invalidate that. And I've mentioned before on the program that overall, and I'm not using today as any confirmation of that really, but overall, we remain bullish into next year, and that the monthly bottom that we put in, the forecast for a September monthly bottom that occurred 1 month late in October, that there's a possibility and even a likelihood that we may not see those lows for more than a year. So that this is one of the reasons why we're bullish, is because we have indications in that direction that we would be seeing higher prices. Now, if you want to take a look at something interesting, in spite of today's very large advance, just to give you some perspective on where the market is, we're still inside last month's range, very easily inside last month's range, last month being October. And, you know, October was a very large month, so that's not that unusual, and it's not unusual to have an inside month at any point in time. But all of this movement up and back that we've had recently, just to put it into perspective, has been inside, well inside, last month's range, and maybe just a little bit more than half of last month's range. So hopefully that'll give you a little perspective on where we are with regard to that monthly bottom and the quarterly top, sorry about my throat today, quarterly top that we have that we put in a few quarters, or, you know, the second quarter of this year. We're coming into the end of the year, and, you know, I'm not a real, let me say it this way, we didn't see much of a Thanksgiving rally. We didn't see one at all, really.
Right.
Somebody could make the argument that this is a delayed version of that. This has nothing to do with it. What really is happening is that some of the ordinary seasonal tendencies of the market are not going to be present this year. We may not get, I mean, I'm not sure I would call this a Santa Claus rally or anything like that either. There's a lot of really serious things going on in the world right now, much more serious than we've all seen in the past, I think it might be fair to say, 20 years. I don't know. I've been around in the markets for 20 years. I've seen an awful lot, and certainly September 11th was a very, very powerful day in the world and a very serious thing that would affect markets and did. Other than that, I'm not sure we've seen anything more important than the kinds of things that we've been seeing here with the economy, the jobs, the whole world collapsing around us, or not the whole world, but an awful lot of it. And the banks are coming in, and apparently they're willing to do something. I'm not sure what that is, maybe print a lot of money to try to save the situation that these countries have got themselves into. It would be really wonderful if some of the people who got us into those situations, some of the politicians, some of the visionaries, some of the people who have a vision they want to see played out in real life, if they would reconsider, they won't, but it would be nice if they would reconsider some of their policies and realize that if you spend a dollar, you've spent it, and it has to be replenished. If you borrow a dollar, you've borrowed it, and it has to be repaid. You know, something so simple as that seems to escape these people, and not any of these countries that we're talking about, Spain, Portugal, Greece, et cetera, and America, none of them have a balanced budget agreement. That's actually to the contrary. Not only do they not have a balanced budget agreement, which is an agreement that the government has to live within its means and can't spend more than it takes in, with the exception of extraordinary circumstances, none of them have that, including us. And I'm going to pretty much bet right now that for as long as any of us live, none of them will. We'll all be dead prior to any of these governments. After the bailout, after, it, well, let's just say they get back on their feet. I mean, you know, they have to at some point, or Greece just disappears and turns into something else. they're not going to change their ways. They'll make some minor change that looks like change, but it really isn't change. And they'll go right back to, you know, starting from a lower level, and then the buildup begins again. And more entitlement programs, more spending, more all the same stuff. That's just how it goes. But there is some force at work that is making these governments, including our own, not want to or not be able to pass any kind of balanced budget agreement. Why do you think that is, Wayne? What would your guess be?
Ask me the question again.
What's the reason all of the governments that are in trouble won't, in our lifetime, any of them, pass a balanced budget agreement? Why?
Why won't they?
We're just agreeing to live within our means, just like all of the ordinary citizens have to. Otherwise,
well,
the law comes after you and chases you.
The thing is, yeah, I understand the concept of living within your means. You know, I don't know how, like, take the United States. If we just all of a sudden one day everybody woke up, you know, pulled their pants up, you know, so your underwear wasn't showing. You know, if everybody just decided to pull their pants up, you know, be a man about it and say, we're going to live within our means. I know what that means for me and my household. As a nation, I'm not sure what that looks like, because right now, just give you one example. Although I'm not a big beef eater, if I go to the store today to buy some burger meat to make dinner for my kids and my wife, I expect that beef to have been inspected by the, what's it called, the USDA? The U.S. Department of Agriculture? Is that who inspects meat? You know, but
USDA, I think.
Yeah.
Or maybe the agriculture, I'm not sure.
Whatever, it's got the stamp on it, right? And you are reasonably certain that you can take, and if the date's okay, you're reasonably certain that you can take that package from the store, be it Fresh and Easy, Safeway, or whatever, and you can come home and you can cook that up and feed it to your kids, and everybody's going to be A-okay. Now, I've spent quite a bit of time in countries where you don't have that certainty. That food you're buying looks mighty suspicious. But it's very tasty when you buy it from the street vendor. There's no stamp, no seal of approval. You know you're going out on a limb, but God, it tastes good. So now we're back in America, and suddenly, if we decide to live within our means, what things are we, the people, willing to let go of? Are we willing to let go of good roads to drive on? Are we willing to let go of pasteurized milk, or, you know, USDA stamps on our steaks? I mean, how do we? What does that look like? I'm not saying I'm not for it.
Well, let me give you an example of what it looks like.
Okay.
Just for the simple act of being a government, you have to have certain things be taken care of. Roads, we have to have an army. We have to have some nod to education. We have to have, there's all kinds of programs that would have to be in place. And listen, the government certainly, with its income, because it's taxable, its tax income is there right now. But there's so much that has been wasted. I mean, you're bringing up things like making sure that food is safe and things like this. All those things, of course, would stay in place. We're not talking about changing those. In fact, we're talking about maybe even bettering those. But the simple truth is that our government wastes so much money that it's not even comprehensible by the average citizen. We hear about some of the stuff, but there's untold numbers of programs that are just wasting enormous sums of money every day and every hour. And it's those things that would have to be curtailed, duplicate programs, you know, it goes on and on and on.
Well,
just inordinate waste. Like, as an example, you know, this is just, it's a cheesy example, but it's so government. The $350,000 they spent to fly the airplane over near the Twin Towers so that they could have the postage stamp or whatever with the I forgot exactly what they were going to do with it, when anybody could have photoshopped it for, you know, $25 worth of time, mm-hmm. and the government went and spent $350,000 on it. There's a million of those things going on.
They could have hired the guy that made Barack's birth certificate.
Right. They could, exactly. The waste is so enormous that for you to be asking a question about, do I, you know, what does it look like? You know, is my meat going to be safe? Of course, your meat's going to be safe. It might even be safer, because those programs could be improved and et cetera. All the waste is what we're talking about, and all I'm really saying is that once the bailout is over, is anybody going to change their behavior? Is anything really going to change at all? Something similar to what you said. So that's the question, and the answer is no. The answer is no, of course not. Now, in America, if somebody else gets into office, there will change something because that person has a different vision. But where the whole country, like Europe, in Europe and with Greece and these Portugal, Spain, these are entitlement countries. These are countries that have been spending enormous sums of money, paying people for work that hasn't been done. They've been doing all the things that our president seems to admire, and it came and crashed and burned on them. And now they have to be bailed out, and it may or may not be successful. I'd like to see some behavior change, rather than just get the fix, and the fix is fine. If they want to do a fix, if this even is a fix, you know, the market's rallied. I don't know how much of a fix this really is, but it'd sure be nice to see people understand and say, you know what, that's something we can't do. But you know what you're going to hear? No, no, we need to do more of what we were doing before all this happened. That's the problem. We weren't doing it enough. We weren't spending enough money. We weren't just coming up with enough programs. That's what would have saved us. That's what they're saying. That's the visionary's view for these types of societies like Portugal, Greece, and Spain. That's how they think. When they have to get bailed out, it's not like, oh, you know, maybe we shouldn't have done that. Maybe we really do have to be a little more responsible and live within our means. No, I'm telling you. Write the date down. You'll see when you see them on TV later. Their response is going to be, if they do get bailed out and if they do have a second shot at this, we just didn't do enough. We didn't spend enough. We didn't have enough programs. That's why everything failed. And that, my friend, is the difference between the far left and the right, is that the far left believes that you can and should continue spending way beyond your means because it helps people to do so. Well, the people don't seem very happy about being helped in those countries now. When I turn the TV on, I see them running through the streets screaming, setting everything in sight on fire. And the reason they're not happy is because you trained them to be a victim. You trained them to expect money that they didn't earn. You trained them to expect benefits that they didn't earn. And now when you can't provide those because it wasn't economically sound to do so in the first place, they're angry at you, and they're going to burn your little city down. That's why it's not a good idea. And I've said it before, just going to say it one more time. We certainly didn't get here. It used to be common sense that if you don't work, you don't eat. Everybody knew that. It was in the DNA. That's not so true anymore.
It's biblical. It's written. It is written.
Yeah.
He who does not work shall not eat. Now, of course, yeah. We take into consideration those who are sick, are unable to work.
Of course, of course, of course.
All of that, but
that goes without saying. That goes without saying.
Yeah,
it's not even.
I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah, no, I know.
We've wandered far off that path, way off. I mean, let's face it. Somebody's got to stay home all day and watch Jerry Springer, right?
Right. Somebody does. We got here through self-responsibility, through taking the hit and getting up and dusting yourself off and going out and being your own man, being your own woman, being your own family, taking care of business, managing your money, not getting the big handouts, and on and on and on. And slowly as we went from that into more entitlement, more bleeding heart, more entitlements, now taxes go up to pay for all those programs, and we are now at the point where we spend an equal amount every year as to what the entire gross national product is. These other countries are, some of them are as much as six times. They spend six times what their gross national product is.
Does that make? I don't care how far left you are. That math doesn't work.
No.
You will run out of money. Why? How come that part doesn't get through to them? It's just math. It's not left or right. If you are spending six times what your whole gross national product is, that's not a good program. That needs to be changed. But I'm telling you, you'll see. If they get on TV after they're saved, if that even happens, they'll be saying, we just didn't do enough. We need to spend more.
Obviously, we can't get... Well, I don't want to say we can't get the president. I haven't invited him. But who's a leading liberal left economist that would potentially...
Explain this to us.
That would take the other side of that argument and go, okay, guys, let me break it down for you. This is why it's a good idea to spend six times what you make on an annual basis. Here's why you should do that. I would be very entertained and perhaps enlightened because I understand my side of the argument and your side of the argument because we stand on the same side of the street. I would with an open mind, I would like to hear the other side of the argument in some kind of way that makes some kind of sense. And I'm always going to see that little turtle climbing up over that bridge that they spent God knows how much money, I forget, of the TARP money or the whatever, one of the things that, you know, they're supposed to stimulate the economy. They built a bridge for turtles so they wouldn't get run over by the cars.
Right.
Now, I mean, I like a turtle as much as, well, actually, quite frankly, I mean, they're cute at the zoo or, you know, in a pet shop. But if you put them in your house, if you don't clean their little thing every day, they stink. Oh, man. And I hear some people eat them. I don't know. I've never eaten turtle soup. But really, people are out of work. People are losing their homes. And that's one of those outliers, one of those totally outlandish, ridiculous things. But it was real money that was really spent, and that was really supposed to help the economy. Not to mention the fact that it helped the turtle, but it was
right.
The reason we were helping the turtle was really because we needed to help the economy.
I know. You know, if you take the far left's version of what the conservatives do, what Republicans do, which is to bolster business and try to get the fat cats the best deals and make sure the corporations are screwing the little guy. Whatever their argument is, take that argument and run with it for me, just for a minute. Let's just run with that argument. These are the evil conservatives. This is what they want. They want corporations, big business, to run over people roughshod and to hurt people. That's one of their big arguments. That's what Occupy Wall Street's all about. Mm-hmm. The big guy, the 99%, and the 1%. By the way, when the Tea Party came out, they didn't need to be told, don't destroy businesses, don't destroy places, don't litter, don't cause a city to have 1,400 policemen out so that you can, you know, have your thing. I love your program. You want to have dissension. You want to have public. Fine. But it is interesting to me that the people who get the entitlements feel the most entitled. And the people who are into self-responsibility and into not having these entitlements didn't do any damage. Virtually had zero arrests, if there were any. There might have been a very small number.
Right.
We're probably inching in on 2,000 some odd arrests, untold amounts of damage from these people doing this stuff. They feel entitled, but let me make this point. Wait, I just want to cover this. They feel entitled because they've been shown that program. They believe in getting something for nothing. And my success, your success, is their victimhood. That's what it translates into. Now, here's my question. If you take the far left's complaint about Republicans, I'm not saying Republicans are great. I'm just saying self-responsibility is great. That's what I'm saying. Forget which party it is. Self-responsibility is great. It's close to God. And when you take their argument and just take it at heart and say, yep, it's all true, the Republicans, they want to have these big corporations, you know, rule everything. They're all pro-business. They all, you know, crush the little guy, on and on. Let's just say that all of that is true. I'm not really agreeing that it is by any stretch, but let's just say that it is. Is that worse than what they want to do? They want to spend all the money, go get us to 3 or 4 times our gross national product in spending, and then the business community is not just the only ones that are going to have to pay. They want to tax. They're going to have to tax everybody, all of us. That other side, that far left, is going to, what they're going to ultimately end up doing is causing you and me and everyone else to have to pay all of those bills. That's 10,000 times bigger than helping corporations and all this stuff. It's 10,000 times worse because everyone's going to have to be involved. Everyone's going to have to pay. And it does hurt the little guy. It does hurt the middle class guy because the rich don't have enough money to pay all this stuff up. If you took all the money from the rich and just handed it over to the government, all their income for next year, it would be like $300 billion. We've got a $15 trillion problem. It's not even a drop in the bucket. So that's where we're going to end up if we go down that road. We all have to pay for that. And I think that's a whole lot more evil than self-responsibility is. When you waste other people's assets and then turn around and look at them and say, you're going to have to pay because we did all these things to help society and help people and stuff like that. I don't think society needs that kind of help. And I think people in Greece would agree, I hope they would agree at some point, that their beliefs and their ideas have led them right down the path that we may be at some point as well, if we're not careful and if something doesn't change. Thank God there's an election coming up and there's a possibility of real hope and real change by changing what we're not doing, because this administration is doing nothing. They're just waiting around. They don't have, you know, what's there to do? They don't have a clue of what to do with this. And it would be a tough problem under anybody's situation. Go ahead, Dwayne.
No, I was just clearing, I was just clearing my throat.
Oh no.
Well, the thing I was going to say earlier was that as I see, you know, various news shots of this whole Occupy thing, reporters wander into the crowd and, you know, and ask them, why are you here? The blank stares are just priceless.
Yes.
Because my friend said I should come here, or some other lame kind of a thing. I mean, here's all these people defecating in the street and making a big storm over, they don't even know what they're fighting about.
Yeah. Right. It's just, they're just mad that they haven't got enough handout. There's people that, see, this goes back to that thing. Somebody has a different amount of something, money, property, than you do, and that's wrong. That's their basic life philosophy. If you have more than I do, I look out at the world, and I compare myself to others. And if you come out ahead in my mind, I'm a victim, and something needs to be fixed. There's something wrong with the system. Even if it's true that I don't even work a day in my life, and you have more than I do, there's something wrong with that. And you're working your tail off over there, and you took the risks, etc. It still is wrong to these people. That's the entitlement. I'm entitled to that. I'm entitled to destroy other people's property, the very people that I say I'm protecting, the 1%. I'm entitled to not use restrooms and just use it and do it in the street. I'm entitled to all this because I don't have what you've got. That's why I'm entitled to that. I don't know. You know, I think it's pretty obvious to me that self-responsibility is something these people need a couple of lessons in, to be quite blunt. Somebody needs to send them to finishing school. Hell, finishing school, they need to go to starting school to find out what self-responsibility is and why it is such a beautiful thing and why America is based on self-responsibility, not on getting a handout, not on demanding that other people who have been successful somehow owe you something because you've looked around and said, well, gosh, I don't have that and you have it. Something's wrong with this system. You need to give me some of that.
Okay,
Otherwise, this is unfair.
I want to talk about this for a moment from a slightly different perspective, and please don't anyone think I'm being judgmental here at all. I'm not. This is a factual thing, and I would like to hear some people's take on it, and yours too as well, David. I was watching a television program the other night, some news program, and they were doing an in-depth look into the food stamp program. Right now, in America, 46 million Americans
qualify and receive food stamps. Now, if I'm not mistaken, that's 15% of the population. If that number's wrong, somebody correct me. But that's huge. 46 million.
Jeez.
Now, it's so big that it has created a thing at Walmart that they call the Midnight Phenomena. Unlike Social Security checks, people who are on like disability, Social Security, any type of government check like that, those checks come on the third of the month. You'll see long lines at the post office. You'll see long lines at the bank. The food stamp program differs in that that money is paid on the first of the month, and people have a debit card, and it gets credited to the debit card at like 12:01 a.m. And so people at the Walmarts, they have on the first of the month, they've had to change their work schedule, and they have to bring in additional employees and open all of the registers at midnight on the first of the month. And when they were doing this TV program, they were out in the parking lot, and there was like an army of people in the parking lot, literally hungry people, okay, who were there with their... Now, here's where it gets a little... because there were people whipping out their smartphone to use their banking app to check the balance on their card, right? Are you following me? And then they would go, oh, there it is. There's my $600. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you heard the part where I said they use the app on a smartphone. Again, I'm not being judgmental. I'm just saying. They use their smartphone and their app to see that the 600 did hit at 12:01 a.m. on the 1st, and now they go into Walmart. All these people, it's like almost like, you know, a Black Friday kind of thing. All these people come in, and they're doing their shopping. And Walmart has had to adjust how they do business to deal with this phenomenon. All these people, you know, more employees, more this, more that. Now, they on this TV program, they went around and interviewed some of the different families that were on the assistance program. All very nice people. They didn't go into anyone's, you know. And I don't know if they... It didn't appear that they were trying to slant it this way, okay? But they did talk about it towards the end of the program that each of the families they did visit with, they had smartphones. They drove SUVs. They had pretty large flat panel TVs in their living rooms. And they did discuss a little bit that, you know, some of the people, because they let that program out on their website before they actually aired it that night, and they said, we're already getting a lot of angry emails. Now, one of the families on the show who... They were driving an SUV, they had the flat panel TV, and they checked their balance on their smartphone. They were lamenting that because of the down economy, that it was so heartbreaking because sometimes they couldn't do things for their kids. And the lady goes, well, what do you mean? Give me an example. Well, we were at a school event, they were having a book fair, and my son, who's really into something, I forget, he really wanted this one book so bad, but, you know, because we were between paydays, we just had to say no. And the lady doing the interview goes, well, how much was the book? The lady goes, it was $10. And she says, oh. And so the commentary at the end was, you know, we've had all these emails coming in since we put this out on our website, and from people who are screaming about the TVs and the cell phones and the SUVs, and she said, on the other side, we got people going, I'll buy that kid the book. And I had no idea. I knew a lot of people were on, and I think it's a good program, and I think it should be used for people who, I just don't know what the qualifications are, and, I mean, I don't ever want anybody to go hungry. If there's anybody that's hungry in America, you can have whatever I have on my plate. I would rather be hungry than you be hungry. And so I don't want anybody to think that I am not supportive of this program. I just, how, where does this money come from?
I'm blown away. I'm blown away. Where do we keep coming up with this money?
Well, taxes. That's where we keep coming up with it. And the food stamp program is a valid program. It may be being abused, but every government program is abused. They're all abused. That's the thing. No matter how much the government does, everything, waste and the government should equal the same word. If you look up the word waste in the dictionary, it should say government. If you look up the government, it should say waste, because that's just what they do. Even if there's a valid program, there's still more waste involved in that valid program. Not to say nothing of the invalid programs, just the completely meaningless pork programs. The fact is that it just goes on and on and on. It's nothing but waste. You cut out even 25% of that waste, there'd be enough to run this government and have all kinds of wonderful programs, and taxes would remain normal. You could, you know, all the things we've talked about so many times. But I don't want to lament the point too much. I do want to say, as a matter of fact, that I myself, when I moved to Boulder City, was on food stamps. Believe it or not, when I moved out here, we had nothing. Mm-hmm. I had moved out of my home. I was 22 years old. My girlfriend and I, she went out and got food stamps, and we were on that for a little while. And it just, you know, I'm not speaking from when I complain about these programs and stuff. I was actually on one of those programs. I don't remember how long we were on it, but we were on it. I remember.
When I first met my wife, a little hippie chick in sunny Southern California, San Diego.
She still is a little hippie chick.
She is. She's sick today, poor thing. She is so sturdy. She, like, never gets sick, but she's in bed covered up today, so I'm concerned about her. But anyway, when I met her, it was late 70s, Southern California, and all the cool kids, you know, the hippies, were on food stamps because it was so easy to scam the California government. You know, everybody qualified, and it was quite an experience for me, because I grew up in a small southern town in Georgia, okay, where I'm just speaking honestly, guys. I was raised in a, and this is part of why I don't live there anymore, because a lot of the stereotypes and all the other things that you hear about the South, guess what? They're true. I grew up around that, and the food stamp program, there was stigma attached to that. The kids at school who got the free lunch, you knew who they were, because their lunch ticket was a different color than yours. Like, every Monday morning, you had to go up and pay the teacher like $1.50 or whatever it was for your lunch for the week. But the other kids, they had like a voucher or something. And you could tell their clothes were a little bit tattered, you know, or they didn't quite look like the other kids. And it was so obvious, and there was such stigma attached to that. And if you saw someone in the grocery store paying for their food, this is back in the days when it was actually like a coupon that you tore out of a book. It was actually a stamp type thing, not a debit card like it is today. There would be hushed whispers, you know. My grandmother, God bless her, who's the most godly woman I know, she even, you know, I saw her fall prey to talking about that. But then she turned right around and go, well, God bless them that they can get them, and, you know, I hope it helps them. And what are they buying? You know, what are they spending on? You know, and so, but then I joined the Navy, and I'm a man of the world, and then I go to California, meet the hippie chick, and suddenly it's cool to have food stamps. See, back home it was a stigma, but I get to California, and it's cool. We're getting over on the government. Not only are we getting food stamps, but we got Medi-Cal cards. So we can go and get amphetamines and all kinds of good stuff from the feel-good doctors here in California at the taxpayers' expense.
Yeah. Have you noticed that, and then we'll get to the markets here, places that are really liberal, like California, they're all in the worst of the worst financial problems. California is buried. You don't have a chance, California. You have no chance. California's done. They are upside down, more money than they could ever, ever pay off. Period. You take a look at their finances. They're completely done. Now, they're still in business, but their day is going to come as well. And that's another one of these communities. That's another one of these, you know, it's almost a country, California. But these places that are really, really liberal and believe in just spend, well, I got news for you. See, it doesn't work. It finally crashes and burns, and that's where they are. They were giving out IOUs for a while, and I'm telling you, it's going to get worse in California. I love California. I grew up in California. I adore the place. There's nothing, I have nothing bad to say about California except what I'm saying now, which is that part of what you were just saying, Dwayne, it all leads up to the fact that, you know, they're completely bankrupt. They take in much less money than they owe. They owe 10 times what they've taken, and that's what I'm saying. They're buried. And it's all going to hit hard. It's already hitting hard now, but I don't know how they're going to fix that problem. I really don't. If you take a look at the finances of California, it's beyond buried. This is like something out of a bad B movie. It's not going to end well. It's not going to end pretty for them. So I hope they figure out a way out of that. I don't think there is a way out of it. But that's another one of these communities that very, very liberal, very, very in believing in the, you know, the government owes us. It's an entitlement state. And now it's time to pay. Anyway, I know it's fun to get stuff from, for free, but, you know, it's not so fun to get some stuff for free if you realize that everyone else is paying for your ride. And, you know, maybe that feels really good to you. But it doesn't feel really good to a lot of people, you know, to have to be in the position of doing that. So
the one woman on the TV program the other night, and then we'll definitely go to the markets. She was really bothered by the fact that she was in the financial in the situation that she needed, and she said, and the lady asked her, "Well, how do you deal with it? Do you feel, you know, like people are looking at you at the grocery store?" And she go, now here she is on national TV telling this. Sometimes I wonder about people that go on TV. But anyway, she goes, "Yeah, here's what I do." She goes, I've got this way that I pull it out of my wallet here, and then I cover this part with my hand, and I swipe it like this." And she showed her, and she goes, "And then it goes, and see, and then that way nobody can ever see that it's the food stamp card and not like a bank card or a credit card."
So there you are.
So she's so bothered by it that she does the hidden swipe thing. She goes on TV and tells everybody.
Right. I know. Go figure. This is how I do it so that no one knows. All right. Let's get over to the markets. Just, you know, we had to get clear of the air there because this is all related to what's happened in the markets.
Maybe
today.
I didn't totally make my point with the whole thing.
Sorry,
is that at the very end, because you said, "Hey, me and my girlfriend, we were on, you know."
Yeah.
Me and my now wife of 30 years, I ate more than a few food stamp paid for meals, okay? And it wasn't really because we couldn't afford to buy any food. It was because we thought we were clever, okay? And I'm admitting that, all right? I'm just saying. So now we go to the markets.
Well, there. Oh, all
that
right.
That was so cathartic.
So today's advance in the S&P is based on the potential for some kind of bailout. We've moved up powerfully. They had a very interesting overnight market and a very explosive move up today. And we've tested some important levels on the upside. One of them is 36, and you can see that they're staying centering on 36, which is an important level in our work. This also is the on-time day for the daily top that we talked about yesterday, that we wanted to wait for today because of the potential for higher prices. Although this is not an outright forecast, and we probably won't see these numbers today, and again, this isn't a forecast, but I actually would prefer to see somewhat higher prices reached. Actually, I would prefer to see prices like 1252 reached during this advance. Hmm. We may not reach that, but as a preference, something that I would like to see if I was going to short the market. Now, I can get short or long based on other reasons. If I do get long, I want to get long for the idea of higher prices, like we're talking about, for the potential of that higher price. Not a forecast, but just a preference for a 52 test. And if they're unable to do that, especially after tomorrow being the one day late, then I would be interested in shorting the market based on somewhat less important levels, because time is the ruling factor in the markets. It's not price. Price levels are a subsequent product not the primary product in our view. So the fact is that once we get past tomorrow, or even into tomorrow, we're running one day late, and that will put the markets in a critical position for a reversal, in spite of whatever prices have been reached or not reached at that time. So this is a really interesting thing. I'm, as I said yesterday, I'm bullish. I'm buying pullbacks in this uptrend for higher prices. Today's session has confirmed that general outlook, and I would like to see higher prices reached, whether later today or tomorrow. And I would like to see a test or an attempt at 1252. And then we'll talk about the reversal for this into tomorrow. I also got confirmation from our Trader X, Michael, who is going to be here Monday night. He'll be getting into town Monday night. We're setting up a we've moved an area. We've sort of cleared an area for him here. He's going to be here for about a week, but he may be longer. We're not sure. It depends on, to be honest with you, I think it depends on how well he does while he's here. But he'll be here for a full week. For those of you who haven't heard from him on the radio program before, we'll put him on the radio program. You can chat with him or ask some questions, or we can ask the questions that you type in, whatever. And it'll be fun to have that here. So to have him here and to have the interaction with the listeners.
Why don't we do the webcam thing and you can put a paper bag on his head?
We could do a webcam thing. As a matter of fact, at one of our seminars, in our third seminar for Reflected Wave, which, of course, he's a student of as well, we he was there. And the people that went to our June seminar met him. And he sat with them for the whole – he was there for about a day or day and a half and got a lot of questions from people. And he went up and introduced me as well before he before we went up and began the seminar. Very easygoing, soft-spoken guy. You might expect somebody that does what the kind of volume that he does to be hard-edged and you know, something different than what you hear from him. But he is very intense. He has a very quiet type of intensity about him, and very much in the same way that Stevie Wonder, you know, just started writing R&B tunes right from the start. This guy, Michael, from the start, always had the idea that trading in size was where it's at. Now, anybody could think that idea, boy, if I could trade in 100 contracts or whatever, I'd sure make a lot of money. He wasn't thinking that way. He was thinking in terms of trading in enormous size, and it always seemed important to him. This is one of the most important things that I've learned from talking with him, because many of the other things that he says can be very general, and they can almost like be reading your horoscope, or it could mean anything you want it to mean. Mm-hmm. But his statement about he was this way from the start, you know, a lot of people right out of the box have a certain idea fixed in their head without even trying to think about it. I just always liked this, or I always wanted to do this, or I always, that idea is just in their head. And for him, that idea was size. So he, when we first met him, he was trading about 1,000 contracts a day. And he had spent a week here at that time, and I was amazed at that time. And now he's up to anywhere from 10 to as much as sometimes 25,000, which he recently had a day that he was in, you know, in those numbers, the higher end of the numbers, in a single day. Most traders don't trade that many contracts in a year, and he's doing that on a per-day basis. So he'll be here with us for pretty much a week or longer, and I'm going to try to make sure that he does well. And what I'm going to do to try to make sure that he does well, not that he can't do well without our help, but one of the reasons he is going to be here is because he wants to be closer to the roadmap setups, and he wants to see them and touch them and get direct insight, so to speak, into the whole roadmap itself, where the important price levels are, so he can try to really take advantage of them. Now, we don't know how many on next week, we don't know how many of those will occur, but we'll be able to work with that and Reflected Wave, a technique that he does know, together, and hopefully be able to make some progress in his own trading, however he sees fit to use that. So that's the purpose of the trip. But and I'm always inspired, because one of the things that happens when you're around somebody that's doing something dramatically different than what you're doing is, number one, you see that it's possible. And just the mere fact that something's possible changes your whole world. Whether or not you'll ever do it or not, it doesn't seem to even make any difference. Just that you know it's possible. You know how when somebody invents something or somebody makes a breakthrough, and then suddenly a whole bunch of other people start making breakthroughs of similar type just because it was possible, it was shown to be possible, then suddenly now everybody can go do what used to be impossible. It's possible for a bunch of people. Why? Because suddenly just knowing something's possible changes your entire outlook. So knowing that it's possible to trade 5,000 or 10,000 contracts in a day is a real eye-opener, not just as from a voice over the radio like you're hearing now, but to be sitting next to somebody who's actually doing that, where you've got their screen and you can see what their open net equity is in a position, plus or minus, and you see how many contracts they're putting on and taking off and all that. It really is something else. I'd love to have a video set up here if he would be amenable to that. I don't know that he would be, but I'd love to do that so you could see for yourself, the listeners could as well, and we could transmit that so you could get some of the inspiration from that to say, wow, God, that is really amazing. Doesn't mean that you can go turn right around and do it, but just the fact that it's possible will open your eyes. And that's what we talked about yesterday, is just having a life where you're allowing these types of things in, where you can make a breakthrough, because breakthroughs are what we're all about. All of us, men and women, we're here to make breakthroughs. We're here to see something, to have an insight, to be jetted forward in through some understanding of something, to make a discovery, to learn how to live better, whatever it is. And, you know, we have the FedEx guy here that I need to accept a package. So, Duane, take 1 second here, because I want to finish this, and let me just take care of this for 1 minute.
Now, I want to say this for those of you who may be new to the radio program. This guy has
I'm
been...
back.
Oh, you're back. Well, that was quick. You have a magic...
No, that is, well, I tell you what, I'll get right down to business with these people. Give me that package. I didn't even sign. Anyway, I said, get out, get along.
What I wanted to say was to folks who may be new to the radio program or new to the podcast, new to this neighborhood, Michael has been on the show, is it two times or three? Three, I think.
I think it's been three times.
Three times, going back, what, 4 years?
Many years.
Three, four. Yeah. So the podcasts are archived out there. I'll try to gather up the links for anyone that would like to listen to some of the previous interviews. Now, David's talking about large size, okay? And I know that some people are going, well, you know what? I'm just a guy with a $5,000 account, and I don't have the ability to go for the 20, 30-point moves like this guy does. Mm. I really want you to listen to the last interview we did with him on the radio program. Spoiler alert, I'm going to go ahead and tell you what he said. So put your fingers in your ears and go, la, 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 if you don't want to hear. I asked him, okay, contracts and size aside, what's a good day for you in the market? And he said a couple points. And I think that was so profound. And so that should be so encouraging to everyone who has a $5,000 account. And you're thinking, well, wait a minute, I got a $5,000 account. I can only trade one contract or maybe two. You can actually trade more than that, but you shouldn't. And that's a whole other discussion. But the point is, when we talk, or David talks, or he talks, whatever, I talk about trading 10,000 contracts, whatever, okay, it's going back to a very simple concept. If he nets 2 points a day out of the market, that's a boatload of money, man, off of 10,000 contracts. So it's not that he's trying to do something that you can't do, okay? He's doing the very thing that you try to do, okay? And here's a guy with a big account, trading more contracts than I can fathom, okay? And he is succeeding at this and doing this and amassing this money and buying seats on the exchange by doing the very thing we try to teach you to do every morning in the live trading room, and that's take 2 points a day out of the market on average. You do that, you keep doing that, you compound that, you add contracts as you can afford to, as you earn money from the market, and it allows you to. You may never trade 10,000, you may not live long enough to pyramid it up to the point where you can trade 10,000 contracts, but there is the option that once you have a proven track record, there are people who will throw money at you to trade for them. I don't know that you want to go down that road. That's a perilous path for me. I don't particularly like the concept and idea. But for you, it might be just the thing you want, just the thing you need, and maybe you do well with it. Okay? So when we have him on here, you know, we'll talk. He'll talk. You know, the size will get talked about. That'll be discussed. That'll be bandied about. It is fascinating. It is to think of someone going home at the end of the day, "Hey, honey, how'd you do it at work today?" "Eh, I made $175,000. And another day at the office." Wow. Think about it. All right. Not trying to make anybody feel small or bad. What I'm really trying to do is to make sure you don't feel bad or don't feel small. I want you to be filled with encouragement and hope that all you have to do is learn how to take a couple points a day out of the market consistently on average, and you can go do be whatever your wherever your dream takes you. The fact that you only have
your life like it's golden.
The fact that you only have $5,000 in your account right now is meaningless. I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, in a good way, it's meaningless. Because what's important is not how much money's in your account today. What's important is that you learn some way, whether it's from the I Ching, or reading your horoscope, or reflected wave, or our indicator set, or being a partner, whatever. However, Elliott wave, however you do it, okay? It's not about how much money you have to trade with right now. It's about learning how to produce consistent results in the market. That's where people get
that's what it
up.
Is. That is what it is, and it's beautifully said.
Thank you.
So, yeah, no, that's what it is. That's exactly right. And he does, of course, have days like all of us do where you might get 8 or 10 points and have just a home run day or more. You know, I know he did well today, but, you know, on average, he's, you know, just looking for a small number of points, whatever it is. In size, so that's well said. So it'll be a lot of fun to have him here. We'll get back to the markets now and continue on. But I'm looking forward to it. And if there's any change in plan, we'll let you know. But I'm planning on having him here on Tuesday morning of next week on our program.
That sounds great. I look forward to that.
We'll get him in. And I'll just say things to him like, "Listen, you're in my office. You do what I say. All right? You get on this damn radio right now and you start talking.
Oh,
and make
Johnny
it good.
Stand there with the cattle prod."
Oh, wait,
that was a metal detector, not a cattle prod. Oh, okay.
Okay, so with regard to the S&P, just clarifying one more time, and then let's move on to a couple other markets and see what we have. I would like to see some higher prices here. I know we're running out of time for that. You know, we're beginning to run out of time. We're in the on-time day. But this move up is beautiful, and it is I'm looking for buying opportunities, buying territory. I'm not trying to call a top right now. And I'm looking to get in the market at some reasonable spot on the downside, which we may be very close to right now, and in doing so, take advantage of any further later session advance, because so far today has been a trend day up, and I really believe that that's really what the day is going to end up as, pretty much a full on trend day up. So if there's no questions about that, Dwayne, if there's nothing else, listener question about that, we'll move on to the next market here.
Okay, which one? I'll take your euro or gold?
Well, let's go to gold. I had been mentioning over the last couple of days, and let's review this real quick, and we'll get to what happened today. Starting from November 23rd, the natural price for gold for a period of about 4 days From November 23rd forward, the natural price for gold would be around $1,645. And we've talked about this for a number of days. So the market was unable to touch that. The lowest they achieved was 1667, which is nowhere near that and doesn't count as a completion under any interpretation. So because of that, that meant when the market, and I mentioned this yesterday, that we were at a critical juncture right then and there, that the market would have to show its hand, because we're now 4 days past the, as of yesterday, 4 days past that window of time where 1645 becomes valid. It becomes an active level. So imagine this thing, it's just the light is off, and then suddenly it turns on. And for a period of time, that light is on, and that means the market wants to go there. That means that's a level that the market would want to touch. Now, once that four-day period goes by and the market is unable to do so, then it leaves the market in a very potentially bullish situation, because the market, well, for technical reasons that I won't go into all the details, but it means that the market would then potentially want to go substantially higher if they can't do that during that period of time, that being the 1645. So I mentioned yesterday that anywhere from $1,722 to $1,725 or $1,726, any breakout above that level would be an immediate long position, because the market in no way should be able to get above $1,725 or $1,726 if the 1645 natural level is still operative. But we knew that yesterday was the fourth day, and four is a very important level in the natural level deal, and 4 units of time, not just 4 days, 4 units of time. So we had reached that yesterday, and on your program I mentioned that we're right at the critical juncture here. Any breakout above 1725.26, you just buy it. You just get in it. Either wait for a pullback or you just get in it, because they're going to go substantially higher, and we're still going to go higher from here. So today the market did break out above that. There's no way under normal conditions, you know, you can never say 100%, but in normal conditions there's no way the market would have the strength, or if you're Jewish, chutzpah, to get above 1726 unless the market was released essentially from needing to go do 1645. And if they're released from having to do 1645, which normally they would have been after the fourth day, then that would mean that there's a lot of buying pressure, bullish buying pressure in the market. And that's exactly what did happen today. We've gone up substantially. We're up about $31 on gold right now. We've been up higher than that. And I like the idea of being long, like I mentioned yesterday, either on the breakout or, if you haven't done anything yet, on a pullback. For those of you who have and understand reflected wave, this would be a great time to put that to work for new long entry. And we would expect higher prices going into the next day or so, from which we would then be looking to potentially have a reversal. So this is a really good example of a combination of techniques, one of which is utilizing the natural level, the natural number of 1645. It expires. That means those 4 days pass. It's expired, and they haven't been able to break down and run to it. And then subsequent to that, and remember, we were talking about, well, could we just buy it now? No, we want to see it break out. We want to see some final confirmation, and we got that today. So we're already in the gold market because we have a longer-term position. But for those of you, I hope somebody took advantage of that. And if they did, maybe they let us know. That'd make me feel nice. If not, at least it's a good example of two techniques at work that are purely technical, but they tie in with the news and with everything else, because it's all tied in together. What you ate for breakfast this morning is tied in to everything. So it's all tied together. What you ate for breakfast this morning is also on the internet somewhere, because everything's on the internet. Anyway, so we've got that.
Are you a breakfast person, David?
I'm sorry?
Are you a breakfast person?
Of course, Dwayne.
What's a typical breakfast?
Are you not a breakfast? Are you not a breakfast person, Dwayne? Does that mean you? What does that mean to not be a breakfast person? Does it mean you wake up and you're not hungry from having laid in bed for 8 or 9 hours?
Yeah. That's okay. Exactly what it means. Now, here, interestingly enough, if I'm away on vacation, I don't know, like Peru or Ecuador or someplace like that, mm-hmm. Africa.
Really corny, corny place.
I wake up famished and just can't wait to go sit at the table and enjoy the juice. And you know where they got the best breakfast in the world? There's a little hotel on the square in Amsterdam. Oh my goodness. The buffet they lay out there, David. Oh, you would travel to Amsterdam just to eat the breakfast buffet. Forget everything else you might see there. It is just incredible. And anyway, when I'm on vacation, when I'm away, I wake up famished and I really enjoy the breakfast meal. My grandmother always told me, she always made me eat breakfast, and she always told me, son, it's the most important meal of the day, blah, blah, blah. But when I am at home and when I have to get up and go to work, the farthest thing from my mind is food. Just give me some coffee, let me slug a couple cups of coffee and let me get busy. Because if I eat, in answer to your question, I know I should. And so I've bought every kind of known thing that might tempt me in the mornings, from bagels to bran muffins to raisin bran, you name it. And it would be like torture to force myself to eat something before I came and sat down in front of this computer in the morning. It really would. And I wish it weren't true, but that's the truth of it. So what do you eat for breakfast?
Well, Dwayne, I get up, I kind of just meander around a little bit, maybe have a cracker. No, I eat a full breakfast, Dwayne.
Do you really?
Yeah.
You like bacon and eggs? Or?
Well, not bacon and eggs, but, I'll have a nice big bowl of oatmeal with some fruit, I will have eggs, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Every day.
And do you cook that yourself, or do you have like a little diner you hit on the way into the office? Or?
Well, Dwayne, I know as bad as it sounds, the ugly rich and the, the people that are just milling around with all their servants, I cook it myself, yeah.
Okay. All right.
So, I actually do that. We have stuff at the office here, that we do it all here. I don't eat at the house because I'm up very early. I mean, I'm at the office at 5:30 a.m., or maybe a little bit past that. So, I don't eat at the house. I just get out.
God, that would confuse me to go into the office and to cook breakfast there and then to try to get my head into the charts. That would throw me so far off my game.
I don't eat first. I start with the markets. We get through about the first hour, and then I eat.
Hmm.
So, just letting you know.
But you're not a coffee drinker either, are you?
No, for some reason I'm amped up enough that coffee actually is sort of like my antichrist. If I drink caffeine, I'll be in the outpatient clinic of a local hospital quickly. Okay. I get very, it freezes me up. So, I know a lot of people that drink coffee and neither of us, I don't know. You drink coffee, Dwayne, right? I mean, you're pretty big on coffee.
I do.
Yeah.
I
Jody's big on coffee as well, but I'm not. I just, for whatever reason. I love the smell and taste of coffee, though. So I just don't drink it, unless it's decaf.
So you actually do like the smell and taste. You just don't like the effect.
I do. That's right.
See, I don't get a noticeable effect, but obviously if there wasn't some noticeable effect, I wouldn't be so adamant about drinking.
Dwayne, you're a drug addict from the 70s. I mean, come on. Of course you don't have a noticeable effect from coffee.
You see my food stamps? God, they've got to be here somewhere. All right. Moving on.
Moving on. So the gold thing, we're looking for a place to buy. This is a market that's underway. Don't be afraid to buy it. This is, again, the position where people say, well, I don't want to buy it here because I want to buy at the edges or whatever. I would have liked to have bought it yesterday, and I missed my entry. Oh, I missed my best bet. Maybe you didn't miss your entry. Maybe there's another entry that you can get. But a lot of traders are uncomfortable buying in the middle. And I said it a lot of times, the middle is really good. You're going to find it out for yourself, especially if you have good information that the market is, has not made its full move yet. And I believe that to be the case with gold, primarily because of the setup that we're talking about with regard to the 14s, the lower numbers that we were talking about in gold. the natural level, the 1645 and all that.
There's a question for you. Somebody wants to know about the euro, and we'll get to that in just a second.
Yeah, Joe. We'll get right to that as well.
But Richard has a question. David had said 4 units of time is important. Can he elaborate on that, if possible?
Yeah. oh, boy. Okay.
Now, are we talking rosemary in time, or we're talking like TikTok?
We're talking TikTok,
okay.
Not rosemary.
Right. I thought maybe he was trying to get your breakfast recipe. Okay.
Oh, okay. okay, I'm not utilizing astrology in our work, but I did study it. And when I say astrology, I don't really mean literally astrology. I mean planetary motion. The fact that there is physically planets in motion, and we're one of them. So I've studied that.
Do you wear a turban with a big jewel hanging from it when you trade? Do you?
I'm sorry?
Never mind. Go ahead.
Okay. and one of the things that I noticed, because we do use the retrograde of Mercury is important in our work. It's not something that's huge, but it is something that is a backdrop to some of the things that we do, you know, in terms of our trading. And, you know, I haven't talked a lot about this, but I have mentioned it before on your program.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that has brought me the number 4, it has a number of meanings. I'm not going to go into all of them. But one of them is that there are 3 of these retrogrades per year.
Okay.
And I've seen this in other... There's the same principle that I'm going to try to explain is in other planetary motion. Now, just real briefly, I'll take a minute with this. The retrograde is an optical illusion that's created because we're looking out from the Earth outbound, and we ourselves are spinning on our axis, the Earth is, and it's simultaneously moving in a circle around the Sun. So that's 2 separate bits of motion right there. And those 2 bits of motion are also important. I know this sounds silly, but that's 1/2 of 4. So what our Earth is doing, because I looked and I'm trying to find the meaning, you know, I'm always looking at, when I'm looking for a principle, I'm looking at very basic things. So one of the very basic things that happens in our movement is that we are spinning on our axis and we're rotating around the Sun. So that is the number 2. So for me, anything that's related to the number 2 is very important for us because we have 2 basic motions that are occurring. Now, this is not an astrological viewpoint that I'm expressing here. What I'm expressing is something that is just an observation, and it's an observation that has meaning to me and may not have meaning to somebody else who's in astrology. But the fact that the Earth has these 2 basic motions is important. So that's number 1. I can go into other ones. I could go into the retrograde of Mercury one, but let me say a little bit about it and how we use it. I'm not sure I want to go into all the detail about it, but the fact that there's these 2 basic motions in our Earth, would you not agree with me that that's important? Does that not seem like it would be a basis for something? That it's an important something, and I think it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we're spinning on our axis, and we're rotating around the Sun.
Yeah.
So
I can,
that's 2 things are happening.
I can go with that. Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's a very basic, important observation. I haven't seen it in astrology. I haven't seen a use of it in astrology. I haven't seen them say, this is what we think is important for this and that reason. It's just important and to me. And it may well... be important in some other study as well, but to me it struck me as important. So the retrograde of Mercury is important because it is a volatility can increase dramatically during the period of the retrograde. And I won't go into a lot more detail right now, but I use that as a backdrop for some of our more important cycles where we're dealing with volatility.
It gets more volatile during the illusion?
Yes.
Ah.
during the retrograde, not
okay,
the illusion.
But the retrograde is an illusion, correct?
Yes, that is correct. Listen, the fact that it's an illusion to us is meaningless. The fact that it's meaningful because we can see it. We know that it's occurring, and so it's a very complicated illusion, by the way. And what the illusion is, by the way, is that as you're looking out at the planet Mercury from the surface of Earth, it appears to be moving from right to left through the sky, and then it appears to slow down over a number of days and actually reverse its movement and go backwards for a number of days. That's very peculiar.
But it's not actually doing that.
It's not actually happening. And the complexity of the illusion is mind-boggling, how it actually works. It'd be very difficult to explain it so that you could visualize it through the words. So I'm not going to try.
I'm getting a little swimmy-headed just thinking about it.
Yeah, do you have a Valium or something I could take quickly just to get me... God, this is hurting my head. But during that period, in astrology, they call that the retrograde. That's called retrograde motion. And every planet that we're in the solar system with, really, it actually does have, other than the Sun, has a retrograde. Because we're going to see that same optical illusion. The retrograde periods are going to be longer or shorter, etc.
So why Mercury? Why is Mercury a big deal to you? Do you work with Pluto as well? Oh, no, that got deplanetized.
It was deplanetized. I just threw that out right then and there. As soon as they deplanetized it, I said, well, you know, I always had questions about Pluto. You know, it's like, that's a weird little planet out there.
No, but seriously, why Mercury? Why not?
Well, Mercury is important for a number of reasons, and all of this stuff is complicated, and I don't know if it's worth going into the trouble of explaining it. There's a simple explanation, and there's a more complex explanation. One of the explanations is that...
Well, I know you're not an astrophysicist in real life, but you do play one.
No. It's just that, number one, the simplest explanation is that I saw a connection between those retrograde periods and volatility. And so that's a really easy explanation. And so that's a good explanation for you. There's another explanation that's more mathematical in nature, and it has to do with the positions of the planets. So, you know, you have the Sun, which is at the center, and then three planets out is us, and the fourth, and on and on and on. So, let's not go there because it's not something really practical right now that's going to make any difference to person, but I have told the people, the listeners on the program before, that if they want to, they can get what's called an ephemeris, which is a calendar for planetary events, and that calendar will tell you when these retrograde periods occur. So as an example, in my own trading, if I'm just, for whatever reason, if I have a reflected wave bottom during a period where I believe the volatility is going to pick up based upon either our own volatility cycles or those are backed with a retrograde of Mercury, then I will tend to hold that position for a whole lot longer than I would for a normal position, because there's the potential for a much larger move underway. Does that make sense, Dwayne?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I'm listening. You have my attention.
Yeah. So... really, for me, what the planets didn't do a lot of help for my literal trading, but I learned a lot of mathematical ideas from looking at the motion, one of which is that 2 is very important for us, that's a very important number in for Earth, for planetary stuff, and for other things, so in multiples of 2, etc. So... That's about as far as I would like to go with it now, because it gets to be mind-boggling for people who are not. It's complicated stuff, and I don't really, a lot of people look at it and think there's a lot of secrets in it. I don't know how many secrets are in it. I do know that I do believe that everything is connected. So, I'm of that belief. Some people are, some people aren't, you know. So there you are.
All right, well,
I'll leave it.
Richard, does that answer your question?
Hope it answers his question somewhat. I'm rambling on here. He's already left and went to do his dry cleaning.
I think he's having breakfast.
Okay.
Richard says the square root of the number 2 is 1.414. And I believe the yearly motion of Mercury around the Earth is about 414 days. I say pretty interesting.
Okay. Well, very good.
You know, that kind of stuff right there, that is so foreign to me and the nature of who I am. Although I have this incredible inquisitive thread that runs through me about not just markets, but all things. But when they start with the square root of the number 2 is 1.414, and I believe the yearly motion of Mercury around the Earth is 414 days, okay, I agree, it's interesting, but what about the one point that you just threw away? The same thing applies to the whole Fibonacci structure. It's like the one point. Well, okay, and then they just throw half of the number out the window. How do you do that? I'm not trying to be ugly here, Richard. I'm just saying, I'm admitting my own lack of ability, not ability to comprehend, but just confusion at it all.
Yeah. No, listen, Dwayne, the only reason for, at least for me, that these things are interesting is because man didn't spin the planets into motion. That's the only reason it's interesting, is we didn't do that.
Right.
It's not arbitrary. They're spinning at rates that are meaningful. The Earth is spinning at a rate that's meaningful. And a person can say, well, yeah, everything's slowing down. The Earth, the universe is expanding, whatever. You can put all that in there. The fact is that we didn't do that. We're a subsequent product of that. And so it's natural. And so anything that's natural is interesting to me. The fact that it's not something that we did, it's not arbitrary. And so then, you know, the random people say, well, it is arbitrary. It's just random. This is how it just ended up. But even if that is the case, it has meaning. And I'm looking for that meaning, and I'm always looking for a principle. So that's kind of how I started. I'm always thinking in terms of principles. I'm not so concerned with the detail about how to necessarily trade it and all this other stuff. Obviously, that became important along the way. But the principle, like, what is the principle this thing is working on? Why would, you know, what could we say about this? And maybe that comes from being raised around a philosopher, which I was. And so the idea of looking for a principle in these things became important to me. I do want to say that this planetary stuff, I don't suggest that you take a lot of time and burn through it, because it'll really burn your brain. And I don't know if you're anything like me, but I can get in there and burn it up with the good guys. But after a period of time, when you've got like 8 or 9 different things that you're keeping track of, trying to make sense of, it'll get you pretty crispy around the edges at some point. And you may or may not, you'll start thinking, you know, I could just get a regular day job and be a lot easier than this. So I don't want it to be, you know, it's like Dwayne's thing. It can be simple. You know, trading isn't easy, but it can be simple. Well, yeah, that's something you might want to consider, is that the simplicity is an important part of it. I'm just interested. I'm not necessarily looking at it to really find the secrets of the universe. I'm just interested. I just am wondering about it. And it just, certain things strike me, and I'll just go after them for a while. I did spend a great deal of time looking at the whole system itself and trying to ascertain things from it. And there's a number of really interesting connections that I could go into detail with you about. Mercury is just one of many. But in the end, I found out that a very important principle, here we are again at principles, are at work. That if the market really is driven by planetary motion, then you could subtract the planetary motion out, and secrets of that motion would be hidden right in the market itself, in relationships that the market makes itself. So that's, you know, that's kind of where I am now, because the market is moving energy. It's energy in motion. And it has laws and principles that it has to work under. It's not free to do any and everything that it wants to do. It actually is under law, like everything else is under law. Bring me something that isn't under law, Mr. and Mrs. Random. Bring me something that isn't under law. And if you bring me something that you say isn't under law, you are not really obeying the real rules of science if you say that it isn't under law because you can't figure it out. It's under law because everything that we have looked at in science ultimately resolves itself into some kind of periodic motion. Everything. And whether we understand the motion or not, and that includes the subatomic world, which we don't fully understand, obviously we're millions of miles from understanding it. But these things all have laws that are governing them. This is a universe of laws. And so I'm always interested in seeing the law, or at least a principle, and trying to come up with something that I could apply and look at it, the markets in a different way, et cetera. So, and it is, like I said, it's so complicated with the eight bodies in motion, nine bodies in motion, that it's not something that you're going to have a lot of fun doing. It's like somebody saying, I can't wait to get home and just relax with some insurance company actuary tables and just go over, you know, just go over them. I just can't wait to do that. You know, it's really complicated. Actuary tables are the tables that one figures out how long people are going to live and die and all that. Okay, I'll move on. It's kind of funny, but if you don't know what an actuary table is, it wouldn't be that funny.
I do. Okay. You know, and according to the actuary table, I should weigh exactly 159 pounds. God,
oh, okay.
So
well, I used to watch those Jerry Lewis movies, and he would always go, actually, he would make, he'd snap his fingers, and say, and I used to think he was saying actuary, and it's actually.
So,
all right, I'll move on.
You know, I've often commented on your good posture.
Yes, you
it
have.
It dawned on me yesterday, and you probably don't even realize this, David Williams, but it goes beyond, because I knew that good posture didn't, like, truly define it, but, and it dawned on me that what you have, sir, is military bearing.
Oh. I'm all ears for this.
For everyone, no, I'm done. All the positive strokes you get today. Now, for anyone who's been in the military, you know what military bearing is. For those of you who haven't, you can Google it, and you still won't totally understand it. You got something you'll never understand, David, unless you go join the French Foreign Legion. So, I don't know.
Okay, well,
you're the only
I don't know what
that'll take
that
you
on,
at this stage.
Let me,
we got to talking about actuary tables, and my magic number is 159, and I just can't, you know, boy, I close in on it, and I get so close, and I get aggravated and go eat something I shouldn't.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding.
Well, you're in pretty good shape, Dwayne.
Oh, I am. And I'm ruggedly handsome.
And you're ruggedly handsome.
Very rugged.
And you've got beer-battered hair, all that stuff. Okay, so let's move on here. So anyway, keep an eye. Go get an ephemeris. Think of the word feminine.
And an actuary
table. Ephemeris. It's a book of planetary events, and you can keep an eye on that. That's something easy and useful that you can use to help you know when some of the some larger potential movement is going to occur in the market. You can check that out. There's many other potential connections as well, but that's a good one to start with, and you might find that interesting. So any other question about that, Dwayne, and I'll move on bigger and more important markets.
Let's do right, the euro. We?
Okay. So similarly, we had the gold that we talked about yesterday for an up move breakout. We got that. The S&P, we talked about higher prices coming. We've got that, and we'd like to see even higher prices. And then we have the euro, which is another market that we talked about yesterday and over the last week, actually, about this particular forecast for the euro. Now, this particular forecast for the euro is important for a number of reasons. One is that it's a longer-term setup, and longer-term setups have, you know, they take longer, but there's a lot, you know, potentially there's more movement in them, and we're talking about the euro finding support at the 132 and change area, which it did, and then over the next 2 weeks advancing up to 136.70 into the week of December 12th, which is at the end of this week, will be two full weeks from the end of this week. So it'd be the following week, you know, 2 weeks from the end of this week would be the on-time week for 136.70 for them to get up to that level and complete that price. This is a two-tiered forecast because the market's going to go up into that date, and then it's going to reverse a minimum of 400 pips to the downside. So it's a two-step roadmap for you to follow. So we first go up to one, and listen, it doesn't have to stop at that level. This is the trade to target. This is the natural price level, 136.70 on the upside. And then we will look for a very powerful reversal at that point. And, you know, we were talking, it's funny, the whole business of this is so funny. We were talking yesterday, Duane, you and I, about, you know, well, what's going to happen here to get the market to do this? You know, because we're talking about the euro and, you know, the fact is that they're talking about the euro going away. It's a currency that might just go away. And yet nobody's selling it off. We've had a good sell-off into that announcement. But then the announcement came out, and isn't that a beautiful sell the rumor, buy the fact? The rumor is it's going away, it's going away, it's going away. The news comes out, you know what? This damn thing's going away.
This is an hourly chart that I've got up. Look at the size of that candle.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, I don't know, freakish, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, it's freakish. It's a good example of how the technicals and the fundamentals will run together. It's, you know, it's not magical. It's just the fact that the market is like an antenna. It picks up all kinds of signals. You can read some of them. Some of them you may not be able to. But those cycles represent, those indications are when news is going to happen. You could effectively be saying, I'm forecasting when news is going to occur. Rather than saying the market's going to go up to such and such a price and turn here, we could say we're going to get big news right here. Because news and the market often run together. We do see moves where there's no particular important news, but a lot of times they run together. So it's not that big of a mystery. Anyway, so the fact that they did do this, the fact that they had this reversal, now, should we just hold on to the position because David Williams said it's going higher and it's going to go up to 136.70, or should we protect ourselves? Should we protect ourselves, or should we just let the position go? Of course, we should just let the position go, as I said it. No, you should protect yourself, because at this point, from this point forward, as a matter of fact, let me get back to this one chart. Any closes back below a certain level, and I don't have it in front of me right now, will be, we have to use caution, just like we normally do. And let the market continue to confirm. Let me go in here and see. So we've had a pretty decent pullback here from today's high on the euro. But under normal conditions, we're expecting the market to continue higher. But remember, it's excuse me, it's a two-week deal. So we're looking, you know, you'd be in this for some time. It may hit there early, et cetera, but it is what it is. And it's going to take some time to get up there. I would think from this point forward that we wouldn't see any daily closes below like 133.10 or something like that. That's just I'm not making that a magic number, but I wouldn't expect to see any closes. That's a whole 100 pips below us. And I'm not suggesting that you use that necessarily as a stop, but we are talking about a sizable move up, from, you know, these levels. So, up to, the 136.70. And I like what I've seen here. We're at Wednesday in the week here, and so the market is starting to confirm that outlook. So all three of the markets that we talked about have done...
So, David, let's pin this thing down a little bit here.
Sure.
I know that the listeners have great admiration and respect for your forecasting ability, as do I.
Okay.
But I know that a lot of them really want to kind of nail down how they can translate this euro into some greenbacks.
Okay.
So knowing that it's going to go higher from here, that's a good thing to know. And what was the number you just threw out that you said, you know, don't use that as a stop, but what was the number?
Well, just, I think it was 133. Let me get the chart up here. I think it roughly 133 and change, you know, low end 133.10, something like that. I would think that we're going to see daily closes above that from now on. That's just a general idea, but that's what I would be looking for, a continued motion. And here's another way of saying it. If we got daily closes below that level, that would be of concern to me. Now, I know we have plenty of time left for the market to do all kinds of things before we get underway, but if today and this news didn't actually start the trend, I'm not sure what can. So I'm thinking the trend has already begun. That's how I'm looking at this. I'm sort of just putting together some basic logic. Mm-hmm. Really big piece of news came out today. Our government and a number of other governments have gotten together and said they're going to do this big thing to help bail out. And this has been, you know, a big thing in the air that now that would normally start this trend on the upside. So if that's the case, then I'm not looking for any closes back below some critical, semi-critical levels from this point forward. And I would be using, and you know, excuse the sales pitch, but for those of you who know and understand and can use reflected wave, I'd be using pullbacks on reflected wave to buy the market, or you could use Dwayne's methodology as well to be getting long in the market somewhere here.
See, I could encourage anyone inside of this square to use that as a point of entry, but that's just a big area, you know? And,
yeah.
And it is what it is. This is an hourly chart. This is a big picture view. This is a big move. And can you do it with the 2 points of risk? You know, no. Maybe you can. But here's the thing. And I talked about this the other day on the show or in the trading room or with Bert or maybe all of the above. But some people will step up to the plate 10 times with 2 points of risk in a day. And end up making no money. Whereas if they had stepped up to the plate with a little more risk one time, they might have done okay that day. I'm not trying to tell people you need to increase your risk and any of that. I'm just pointing out something that more and more becomes very obvious to me. See, if you're happy getting, if you're good with getting a couple points, you don't have to risk 20 points to get 2 points. Okay? Don't ever let anybody pull that wool over your eyes, okay? But if you're going to shoot for 20 points or 100 pips or 200 pips or any of that kind of stuff, I'd rather let the guy at the fair throw darts at me than the knife guy. I'd rather be the guy on the spinning wheel that the guy's throwing. I'd rather be that guy than the guy that's trying to. That's the death by a thousand cuts kind of thing, where you're going to nip, and then pretty soon you got no money left because you keep getting stopped out, and then it goes 200 pips or 50 points or whatever the numbers are. You follow what I'm saying, David?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
So
I totally
answer?
Agree.
So
generally,
now we're coming
if
to you for the answer. You're the answer man. You're David Williams, the answer man. Come on.
Generally, if you're going to make the bigger trade, trying to make 200 or 300 pips, you're going to have to risk more. You're not going to trade with a 2-point stop in the majority of the cases. So, 2 points in or 2 ticks, whatever, you know, however that particular market works. You have to take larger risk over time to make larger rewards. Sometimes you can. I've had some trades where you get a very small risk, and it does happen. You can set it up. But over time, as you do that more and more and more, it tends towards larger risk for larger reward. It's just the nature of how risk and reward work. They're kind of like two sides of the same coin. So keep that in mind. It's nothing to be afraid of. It's just if you want the bigger gain, then you will have to ultimately, over time, step up to larger risk. So keep that in mind. So with that in mind, we'll watch this over the next several days. We could still have, maybe we have a nice pullback here, a little deeper from here, possibly on the euro. But I like the idea of being long, and we're still, like I told you yesterday, we're a little bit early because I prefer to get long. This is my preference. I'm actually somebody who would like to be long going into the second week from the on-time week. In other words, the on-time week is December 12th, and we start that second week away from that next week. But, you know, we've had a nice move up here today. And I like what I've seen. You know, this is a very powerful move up, and I know what it would look like if it wasn't acting properly, and we're nowhere near that yet. So if you want to wait a little bit, you can. If you're asking for a specific number to look at, if that's what you were meaning before, Dwayne, let's take a look at it and see if there's something here that could give us some hint as to a level that's closer by, if that's what we're talking about, is sort of minimizing. But then, you know, you do have to live through the idea that you might get stopped out because of that, even though the move ultimately may occur. But let me just take, I haven't been watching the euro real close here today, except knowing that it did that. But let me give you this level. I wouldn't mind, hold on here. Let's just do something really easy with this and see if we can we're trading right now 134.21. That still is quite some distance from where they were. Give me a minute with this, and let's just take a look.
Okay.
We may be able to do something. Because today's advance was sudden and powerful all at once. You know, they didn't really trade to there. It just blasted to there. Yeah, I'm not sure I'm comfortable giving a pullback level just yet because I want to allow reflected wave to show us an important level here. Let's take a look. One other two things. Yeah. I would like to give a level out. I just don't know that I'm comfortable just yet giving a buying level just from this point forward. But I will say this, that with this pullback, it'll be pretty easy. In fact, if you want to, why don't you do this? Why don't we wait for the market to start to firm up? Let's let them do the decline, and then let them show us a very nice, easy, and obvious firming up of the market. Firming up means closing well on some larger time frame, you know, something like that, or a reflected wave bottom. And then from that point forward into tomorrow, we can find a very nice spot for the listeners to consider going long. I think that would be an easier and safer thing because I haven't really set up much. I have the longer term stuff on the euro here, but no real shorter term stuff. I'm not sitting here with a lot of, like I do with the S&P, shorter term stuff set up. And I would like to let the market have a little time to do this pullback, see their behavior, and we still have plenty of room to the upside. We're in the 134 range, and we're talking about going up to 136.70 or higher. And then again, remember, it's a two-step forecast. Once we get through that, once that completes, then we're looking for a very powerful reversal at that time. So that'll be interesting. So this is a two-step roadmap that we have in front of us here. So
yeah, no, this decline,
maybe tomorrow, Dwayne.
As we can, and I just went to a different time frame, you know, from the hourly.
Yes.
This is just to point out to folks, you know, who aren't using multiple time frames, and there's no magical time frame, okay? They're
no.
just different time frames so that you get a different perspective on things. And that, you know, hourly chart just looked incredibly bullish, and you just wanted to dive in there, man, and just buy that thing based on what you heard David say and the big move, and there's going to be follow-through, and, man, the banks are going to lend money and all of that. But then you come over here to a different time frame, which is not magical. It's a 10-tick range chart. Some of you may not be familiar with range charts. It's just another way of charting price action, and it's quite clear that the market is in a down move right now. Okay? So I would not consider buying until it looked like this. And that might not be the picture perfect time to get in to take advantage of the big move that David's talking about, but I certainly know I don't want to buy here. I want to buy when it looks like this. In other words, you don't buy a falling market. How does that mm-hmm. saying go? You never buy a red candle. Right? Something like that. I mean, you can, but you might as well go to Vegas. Oh, wait, you're already in Vegas.
That's right, I am. I think I mentioned yesterday, I'm not sure, but I think I did mention something about wanting to see the market exceed or get close above somewhere between 135 or 134.90 something and maybe 135.20. Somebody will have to listen to the podcast because I think,
you know,
I mentioned something about
that.
And
I put
they
a
haven't
line
closed
the,
above that.
I put a line on the chart, David, and now I just erased it when I changed time frames.
Okay.
Oh, and wait a minute. We got a problem. Houston, we have an issue. Everybody in the world is still seeing my gold chart, not my euro chart.
Well, there you are.
Well, let me try to fix that, guys. Hang on a second.
Well, either way, while he's working on that, the idea is that we've had a good move up. Fundamentally, if this didn't start the move for higher prices, nothing will, because this is a very big piece of market news for today. So I like the idea. I'm just using that as logic to say that, you know what, the move is probably on. If there is going to be a move, this would be the starting for that move. So I like being long the euro somewhere in here. And if you wanted to be really conservative, and sometimes I do this, it depends on the setup for the market, but I will wait for a close above an important level, hourly or daily, like the 135 level or 135, 23 or something. I'm sure I mentioned something about that yesterday, but we can check. And a close above that, even though that reduces now my potential gain to maybe 150 pips, I'm way ahead now because now it's really clearly technically underway. So I like what I see today. I have no issues with what I've seen today, and I've instructed others to get long in the euro. So, some of our institutional people knew about the setup, of course, and they're long in the euro. So we'll wait that. If you want to be more conservative, you'll make less money, but you'll make it with more certainty. And that's what the whole purpose of that idea is. So just in reviewing everything that we talked about yesterday, the S&P for higher prices into today, gold for the breakout above the one level. I don't have it right in front of me, but whatever that. Let me bring up the gold, and we'll just cover that one more time. And then the euro also. All of these are setups that the gold was for a breakout above 1722 to $1,725. That move is underway. We are expecting higher prices, and we do expect higher prices in the euro as well. So we'll trade this as it continues to occur and, for coming into the next 2 weeks. So there you go.
Okay. Billy. I'm assuming that was tongue-in-cheek. I don't know. You're trying to be a funny guy, right? He goes, yeah, it'd really be nice if we could have charts that match the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, imagine that. I never thought of that. Huh, why didn't somebody bring that up sooner? I'm just kidding. Mm-hmm. I'm being snarky now because my charts don't work. No, my charts are working fine. It's this so crappy GoToWebinar software. Who are they trying to fool with that stuff? All right.
Well,
I'm rejoining the session now. No,
okay.
You're not going anywhere.
I think that's basically it, Dwayne.
You sit right there, young man.
I don't think we have anything else we're looking at. And the crude, of course, continued to go up. We had called for a monthly bottom in crude. And if I go back to that, actually, let me just bring up a December crude. This was something that this was a broader, bigger picture thing, but we had originally forecast a monthly bottom for the crude market in August of this year. And they bottomed in August, and then they tested that bottom in October. And then from there, they've moved higher. So this is now the second month up. And this is we're back up in the $100 range for crude. You know, I just want to mention this about the new cars that are coming out. This is regarding oil prices, gasoline prices, cars, fuel economy. And I have friends that drive trucks and friends that drive cars. The people that drive trucks, it's not unusual for these V8 trucks to get mileage that might be literally as low as 13 miles, 14 miles per gallon in the city, and maybe 18 or 20 on the highway if you're gentle to it. And, when you get that kind of mileage, you could literally be filling up your truck, and a lot of guys are, pretty much every 2 days, depending on how far you drive each day. But let's just say it's an average commute. You might be filling your truck up every 2 days or so, which would mean that it depends on what kind of gas you use and all this, but let's just say you're using high grade gasoline at current prices. Your fuel bill is going to be about $6,000 per year for a truck that you have to fill up pretty much every two and a half days, $5,500 to $6,000 a year. You know what a Toyota Prius, the estimated gas fuel bill is on a Toyota Prius for a year? $900. So if you were driving a Prius, you wouldn't look like a really tough dude. You'd kind of look weird because those are freaky looking cars.
I read one.
You would save about $4,500 a year. It's a hidden expense. It's just leaking out. I have a car that uses a lot of gasoline. One of my cars that I drive almost all the time is has a V8 in it, and it's very similar in mileage like that. And in other words, it gets very bad mileage. And so if you want a $4,500 per year raise, you can just drive a Toyota Prius. As a matter of fact, if you were to do that, you could pay the whole car off in 5 years, pretty much. Not just the difference, you know, you always hear them say, well, you know, yeah, you're driving a car that is 30 miles per gallon, and if you're driving a car now that has 45 or whatever, you know, and it's 3,000 more than that car, it would take you a long time to make up that difference. I'm talking about buying the whole damn car with the difference. If you're driving a truck that gets a V8, a big gas-guzzling thing that's getting 13 to 18 miles per gallon, most of the time you're driving it, you can buy a Toyota Prius with the savings in 5 years.
Yeah. You know, that electric thing with the cars, that's pretty slick. I'm fond of it. When I rented that car in San Francisco last summer, I guess it was. It was odd at first because you can't hear the thing running even, you know?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't run at stoplights.
Yeah. I got in it and I ground the starter a couple times. Oh, it's already running. Okay. The reason crude will never go away, well, at least not in the foreseeable future, is you can put your family in a Prius and go across town or across country, but if you try to move, you know, a couple tons of freight on a electric power, we're not there yet. We're going to be dependent on petroleum for some time until somebody can come up with, there's just no battery big enough and powerful enough at this point to move a semi across the country.
Well, let me clarify something for you on that.
Okay.
Because I think you may have a couple of misconceptions there. No. The semis that you see moving across the country, mm-hmm. most of them have 300 horsepower or less. I'm talking about a truck that is pulling that whole big thing that you see. They're just filled to the brim with stuff. That's 300 horsepower in most cases. And really, really high torque because it's a diesel motor. And electric motors produce all of their torque at the first turn. As soon as they begin moving, all of their torque
is
put out.
So why is there not
ideal.
One electric semi on the road?
Slow down.
It won't work.
Hold your horses.
Mr. Retrograde, it won't work.
Give me a moment here.
All right.
Okay.
This is the illusion, folks. Stand by.
The battery or the electric motor is ideal for lifting and moving heavy objects because it produces all of its torque at 1 RPM. As soon as it begins to turn, all of the torque, which is twisting power, is present and accounted for. It doesn't have to rev up to 2,000 RPM or 5,000 RPM to produce its peak torque. It does have to rev up to a certain RPM to produce its total horsepower. So the electric motor is ideal for moving heavy luxury cars or trucks, etc. The issue is the batteries at this point, like you said, and the fact is that in order to have a hybrid truck, you would have to do essentially something similar to the Chevy Volt or the Toyota Prius, which would mean that you would have a combination of gasoline and battery power. Hasn't happened yet, but they're not that far from it. And later, when we go to fuel cells, the fuel cell itself will be the thing that creates the electricity. And then you're going to see the disappearance of the V8, V6, and four-cylinder engines, because at some point they're not going to be necessary at all. So we're not that far away from a hybrid truck coming out, and electric motors are ideal. They're extremely efficient at turning electricity into motion, physical motion, much more efficient than we are at turning gasoline into physical motion. That conversion process is very inefficient. In a battery and electric motor, it's way, way efficient. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but it's much, much higher efficiency. And the fact that they produce all that torque at very low RPM. If anybody's ever been on one of those Segways, which is a thing that you stand on, you see sometimes police or security people will have them in malls, and they sort of just lean forward and the thing just goes zipping along. They have very, very small electric motors in them and a battery pack, and it'll last for 6 hours, 7 hours. You can be zipping around in it all day. And one of the things you notice when you're on those is that as soon as you lean forward, you get a very immediate surge of power. Even though it's not a total amount of lot of power total, what you're feeling is the torque. And torque is that twisting motion that gives you that sudden pull, immediate, without anything having to ramp up or wind up. And so those electric motors are really cool. When my mother was staying, this is ridiculous, but when my mom was staying in a assisted living home, there was a guy that had brought in a number of different electric wheelchairs for people to look at because they go there to sell them to people who might need them. And so I went in and tested each one of them to see what they were like. And they are surprisingly powerful. They really get down to business and zip pretty darn quick down the road.
I was really surprised.
And you've probably been in your car where you see people crossing the street in their little scooter, and it's, you know, it goes at a pretty good little clip, and they're climbing up the sidewalk and getting around. That's because they have high torque. They can climb over anything.
I was
so
really
you will,
surprised.
You're right. You don't see them now, but you will see them in trucks, I think, pretty soon. Hauling the heavy loads is ideal for electric motors.
Yeah, the closest they've come so far is this prototype that cost them $20 million to build. But it does look kind of interesting, and it has a lot going on. A full 64-foot roof. Well, here's what it says. I mean, this is kind of interesting. Like the Volt, this internal combustion engine is used only to generate electricity to run the truck as an EV, never to power the vehicle. Since the ICE does not directly drive the vehicle, it would run continuously at the most efficient speed and at the most efficient power output. This electric generator would have a maximum power of 440,000 kilowatt. This power would be channeled to two 220 kilowatt electric motors, one at each drive axle. It goes on. You guys can Google this and bring it up. But the driver would take an elevator to his cab from the sidewalk. I mean, this is. You know, the semi of the future with a price tag right now of about $20 million. So,
yeah, no, they're coming.
They're working on it, but it's not feasible now. So we're going to be dependent on petroleum for a number of things for some time to come.
Oh, yeah, but no doubt about it. Plastics and all kinds of things. They're going to be around for a long time.
Get a Vespa.
Okay, well, Dwayne,
man,
I think
Vespa's
that covers
like
everything.
100 miles. I could go, my little Vespa, it can go like, well, I don't have it anymore, but when I had it, I could get 80 miles to the gallon or better, and it was fun. It was really fun. But I rode without a helmet, and I know you're against that. So
I am against that. But I'm also against spending $7,000 a year on gasoline, which is what my bill is right now. So, you know, that's a lot of gasoline.
I fill up both of my vehicles a week, my truck, my wife's van, and I spend $120 a week on gasoline.
Okay.
That's
well, 120 times 4
money.
Times 12 is $5,760 a year.
And I gripe every time I go to the pump, man.
I'm just a little above you. I'm just about $1,300 higher than you.
Oh, you're just one person.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It's ridiculous. If you're driving anything that has, you know, again, any big old engine, 12-cylinder, V8, whatever, you're getting lousy gas mileage, and you're paying those kinds of numbers. If you want a raise of, in my case, if I want a raise of $6,000 a year, I just need to go get a Prius. So there you are.
And it was really peppy. I was really surprised when I got out and, you know, pushed the pedal and got out in traffic. Really had some get up and go. What
Which
one
car
those
was that?
Cost? The Prius.
Oh, okay.
You know, for an electric motor, you think, oh, that's, you know, not going to have any. No, that thing zips.
Well, it's a combined electric and gas.
Yeah,
but
it is.
Yeah, you're definitely feeling it. Definitely has a little zip to it.
Oh yeah.
So you see, this is an investment show. We're showing you how you can make, if you're driving a V8, $6,000 a year more than you're making now. And your investment is about $25,000. You invest $25,000, and you can make yourself $6,000 a year. There you are. There's a nice trade. That's a trade. That's why this is an investment program.
It is.
So no texting us telling us, oh, you're not talking about investments. Yes,
sure
we are.
Sure we are. We got you covered.
We got you covered. Okay, well, Dwayne, listen.
We can do stuff Howard Clark can only dream of.
Unless you have anything else. What's that?
I said we do stuff Howard Clark can only dream of.
That's right. Unless you have anything else, I'll let you go with that.
Okay.
It's nice to see all the markets moving today.
Yes.
Big moves, big volatility. While we were talking, just want to throw this in, we bought the market. Messenger Pro had bought the market on this pullback at 12:33.75. We've We're up at 1235.50 right now. We're holding for our aggressive exit. And the reason we're buying the market is because there's a likelihood of higher prices. And we would like to potentially be in for that run to higher prices. So we'll see what we can do with this on the way up. And that's about it. And I'll plan on being here tomorrow, Dwayne, with you. Thank you for the extra time today. And see all of you, Dwayne, yourself as well, and the listeners tomorrow.
You bought the market, David? Is that what you just said?
We did. We had bought it at 33, 33.75.
Mm-hmm.
They went down to 32.50 subsequent to that, point and a quarter, and then now they're up at 35.50, and we're going to see if we can, you know, manage the aggressive side of this for, you know, a nice advance here.
Before you go, Billy wants to know if your 11.52 target is expected by Thursday.
Does he mean 12.52?
I mean 12.52, yeah.
We don't have that as a forecast, Billy. That's not an actual forecast. That's a preference for me that would get me amped up about shorting the market if we were to get to the 12.52 or higher. So in terms of timing, it would have to occur by tomorrow, because in our work, tomorrow is the one day late for the turning point that is due today, which is November 30th. So we'll see how that plays out. If they don't reach 12.52, and since that isn't a forecast, it's just a preference for a level, I'll still be interested in shorting the market, and we'll talk about it at that time. But that would be helpful to me as a trader if I see them get up to that level. That'd be really nice. And this type of move, you know, this really could do that. But don't act on that as if it's a forecast. Let's just use it if they do get up there, and let's buy the market for higher prices. But let's, if they do get up to that level, whether we're long or not, then we really have something to work with regarding the reversal. And we'll cover that.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay. Thanks very much, Dwayne. I look forward to seeing you guys, and we'll
talk
tomorrow.
David.
We'll put it all together.
Have a great afternoon.
You too. All of you as well.
Bye-bye now.
See you.
Show, 2 hours, 37 minutes, and 34 seconds, and counting. All right. In the live trading room this morning, we cautioned about shorting the market because it's not every day you have 400 points under your belt on the Dow or 40 points under your belt on the S&P. And so, you know, a lot of people would love to see it just stay here. What we talked about, once we got up into this area this morning, we said we could just see the market kind of go sideways, and everybody would be okay with that. And so, for the last 1, 2, 3, 4, we're now in the fifth hour of that sideways motion. And for a candlestick guy, this one right here could have got you. Just pure candlesticks. You would have sold the low here, put your stop up here, and so just want to think about whenever you see something like that. I mean, yep, that is a beautiful candlestick sell signal. Okay, keep in mind you can't see this yet. All you can see is this, and then price opened here. And at some point during the life of this candle, price did come all the way down here. And so was there an opportunity to make potentially some money in there? Yep. Yep. But then this thing kept going. So, I mean, here's another one right here. I mean, after this candle, looked like you had a good sell signal based just purely on candlesticks. And you got faked out again. So my only point in saying that, I said it a number of times in the live trading room this morning, but I'll say it again here, just for the benefit of anyone that cares. When you have that huge momentum move, It's always tempting to get clever and do the counter trend trade and, you know, call the top or call the bottom, but I got hurt doing that a couple times, so more than a couple. And you just don't, there's no glory in it. I mean, go coach a kid's soccer league or something. Get your glory there. I hate to use the tired old thing, the trend is your friend, but whether he's your friend or not, if the market's going higher, who wants to be a seller? The market's going lower, who wants to be a buyer? Yeah, we'd all love to sell at the top and buy at the bottom, but how many times has that not happened for you? So I'm just suggesting that you think about it a little bit differently. Was there money to be made from this move at 1240 down to this move at 1232-3? Yeah, absolutely. But did you have the wind at your back on this trade? No, not at all. Getting long over here, is the wind at your back? Yeah. But I'm going to be honest with you, I'm not a big fan of that either at this point in the day. We may go back up to test this high. We may break to new highs. I don't know. Who knows what news they'll release tonight and how it'll play out. I just know that if I'm going to trade in this session, I'm going to go find something on some time frame. You know, this is, let's drill down to a 10K. If I were going to go long, I got to see a break of this channel. And I have to have my... See, right here, if this thing crosses and we get our pullback entry, our textbook entry, I'm still not interested because we're inside of this descending price channel here. Hey, we were in a descending price channel on the hourly last night. I put a picture of it on the our chart of it on the blog. We broke out of it. Okay. How long will the channel last? Till it doesn't. That's all. I mean, this thing's been pinging around in here for a while. Okay. To me, the market looks like it's going to go lower here. I need to see the channel break, and then I might buy a pullback to test the early highs. I guess that is the early high right there, 1240, top of the channel. So, yeah, I'm not so interested. I'm not saying the market won't go higher, but for me, it's not a high probability setup. That's all. That's all I'm saying. This... That's an old zone there. No bearing on this week. Again, here's a long setup here. But you're still running into that same... I mean, you still got the same trend line, no matter how you chart it. This is ticks versus contracts. Still running into that. Once you break that, now you've got to go worry yourself about that. Not that you necessarily would be worried about it, but if for whatever reason you have to put on a trade, okay, and hopefully you're never in the situation where you have to put on a trade, because that's not the best place to trade from. A break above this trend line, and then there's room for it to get to this trend line, and you don't really have anything in your way there. You see? If you look left, it's kind of a wide open space. But it's got to prove itself first by getting above this, which we know is a price channel on the 10K and would be here on the 21.2 if I took the time to drive it. Draw it. Drive it? Still in the electric car. Okay, that's going to do it. A reminder, guys, today is the final day to get your name in the hat for the drawing of the iPad 2. Okay? You go to cfrn.net/iPad. cfrn.net/iPad. One more time. cfrn.net/iPad. If you've already taken the free trial, send a friend
who hasn't, and let them take the free trial. Or if you truly just didn't, you know, take advantage of the free trial the first time around, and you know, you kind of halfway paid attention, or, you know, you were at work. I mean, you know, if you want to take a second free trial and you can actually focus, you know, if you can actually focus on the task at hand, then by all means, send me an email, secondchance@cfrn.net. Tell me what happened, what went wrong. Promise me that you'll sit up and pay attention, and we'll give you a second chance. We're big believers in second chances. So if you need one, let us know. If you've never taken it, then by all means, cfrn.net/iPad. If you have a friend who hasn't taken it, and you want to get a shot, because if they take the free trial, they get a shot at the iPad, and you get a shot at the iPad. That's a pretty good deal. That's a twofer, right? Twofers are good. Okay, that will be the final iPad 2 plug, because it all ends today. All right? Maybe that's why the market's rallied so strongly. Yeah, CFRN, they were giving away an iPad 2, and Dow was up 400 points. That'll be the headlines tonight, on the blog anyway. All right, thanks for tuning in, guys. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.